Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute and a half past the hour on Friday the 3rd of September 2010, and for the first time in a while, and I guess maybe because this is the first Friday in September, it's a little rainy, a little drizzly outside, so by all means, come in under the roof of the front porch and get yourself a tall, cold, frosty one, or a glass of sweet iced tea. There's sliced lemon over on the table for those of you who like lemon in your sweet tea. It's Friday on the front porch, and it's going to be a short one. It's Labor Day weekend, and, the fact of the matter is, I'm going to give myself not a night off, but I'm going to give myself an extra couple of hours off. That'll give me some daylight to be running back and forth from the smoker as we get the barbecue ready for this weekend's, Labor Day. And Labor Day is, of course, the only holiday we have in this country that celebrates the people who actually make this country go. Working folks, the working class. Remember, if the Republican types in this country had their way, if the Goldman Sachses had their way, if the teabaggers had their way, we wouldn't have a Labor Day. Just wouldn't. It's a time to celebrate the value of hard work, and I intend to do that over the course of this weekend. Also got some activism stuff going on that I'll be going and doing as well. But I love nothing better than getting the fire going and putting a shoulder on the smoker, maybe a couple of racks of ribs, something like that. And just sitting in my chair, quietly tossing a little lump of hickory here, a little lump of hickory there, into the fire, and watching and seeing this little area where we live bathed in hickory smoke, and know that everybody's going, somebody's cooking something good. That's fun, believe me. So we're gonna we'll do about an hour and then knock off if that's okay by you. So just to give you an idea of where we're going, here in a few minutes we will be hearing from my colleague Rick Smith of the Rick Smith Show. You know, he comes your way weekends live now at noon on the horn. And we've got a very special announcement coming. And I think you're going to find it exciting, and I think you're going to find it uplifting. Now, I'm not going to say any more beyond that. I will ask you a question, however. Have you been over to headonradionetwork.com? Have you gone and had a look at looking for work in a cavalcade of crazy? As I promised you, this thing is a whale of a piece, and this is only the first installment in Reverbo's magnum opus, looking for work in a cavalcade of crazy. I think you will enjoy it. As far as commenting on the piece. You can sign in with your Google account, with your Facebook, with your MySpace, with your WordPress, with your OpenID, and we're working on Twitter, I'm told. So there's all kinds of different ways to log in and comment on the piece, and I think getting the dialogue started on this one would be a really nice thing to do. So by all means, go by headonradionetwork.com and looking for work in a cavalcade of crazy. So where to go this evening? I thought you might like a little update. It turns out that, I told in the course of a conversation last night with Sandra, I mentioned this business of Nike's pro combat uniforms for the Mountaineers. No, this is not a sports conversation. This is an exploitation conversation that has a Mountaineer football player in the new, incredibly ugly, has nothing to do with the team's colors, black and white uniforms. You know, I wonder why they didn't put 100,000 on the side of the helmet, maybe, if they wanted to honor fallen miners. You know, they wanted to honor the fallen miners from Upper Big Branch. Well, that's well and good. That's a human tragedy, 29 dead at Upper Big Branch. But what about the 13 dead from Sago? What about the 4 dead from the Aracoma mine disaster? The one that Massey Energy paid thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of civil and criminal fines because they were directly at fault for the deaths. Why not honor all of the dead from West Virginia's blood-soaked legacy of coal? Put 100,000 somewhere on that uniform to remind people that that is the price that West Virginia has paid, so that people could walk out of well-lit rooms whistling and never thinking about the cost. Why not do that? But Nike has relented. They changed the photograph on the back of their the background photograph in their introductory photo that had a Mountaineer football player standing in some sort of open pit monstrosity. You know, let's never forget that it's not just mountaintop removal, it's strip mining everywhere. Because anywhere strip mining goes, ruination follows quickly on its heels. Whether it's the Powder River Basin of Wyoming, or the Black Mesa of Arizona, or the hills of Appalachia, or even the Deep South in Alabama, where another mining death was charted, totted up on the little tote board of the price that people pay so that folks can walk out of well-lit empty rooms and whistle as they do so. No, Nike changed the background photo, and now the football player is simply standing in a football stadium where one would expect to find a football player. What's interesting, however, is the pissy hissy fit that has been thrown by ignorant colistas in the course of this mini debate. This is here's one from daughter of W.V. coal miner. Coal is in my blood. My dad, my immigrant Italian family, cousins, in-laws are all employed by or have been employed by the coal companies. Did you know 99% of West Virginia power is because of coal? That's what I mean when I say coal keeps our lights on. 50% of the nation's powered by coal. WV is second to Wyoming in coal production. Ever heard of the severance tax? It's the state's way of giving money back to the coal communities. This woman doesn't even understand what the severance tax is. Every county in this state, whether it produces coal or not, gets some of the severance money. And the severance money is pathetic. It is pathetically low. Coal was discovered in 1742 in Boone County. Actual mining began in the 1800s. Since then, about 13 billion tons of coal has been mined in West Virginia. That's pretty extensive history of coal in our state. Yeah, Jesus. Oh, there and... Look, the hippies are ruining our football program. The hippies are ruining our uniforms. Oh, Jeebus. Yeah, no kidding. But we won. It's not much of a battle to win, but we won a little battle, and I'm proud of that fact. I'm still not proud of the fact that the West Virginia's team colors are old gold and blue. It's not the old gold and blue. No, it's old gold. You know, there's a difference between shiny new gold and old gold. It's old gold and blue. So what did the geniuses at Nike come up with? We got black and white. Let's see, we did a houndstooth for the Alabama Crimson Tide. We've put angel wings on Tim Tebow's shoulders last year. And We made the University of Oregon look like a complete embarrassment. What can we do to the stupid hillbillies? Give them black and white. Screw them. Everybody else does. Let's do it, too. They will wear it for one game, and hopefully they will be forever put away. Maybe burned at midnight with a black mass or something. But then again, I'm sure you're all tuning out because, there goes Bob. He's being shallow talking about sports again. Shh. You know how we talk about reaching the other side and messaging to the other side? Guess what? They don't think sports is stupid. They're not so high and mighty as to look down their nose at sport. We might want to pay attention. Just say it. But, as a matter of fact, I have on the phone right now with us Rick Smith.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Rick, what's up, brother?
I am here and just enjoying the show.
Not much to enjoy so far, but it's much better now that you're here. I told people at the beginning of the program that we would have a special and fun announcement for them. Are you ready to make it?
Not just yet. Let's hold off a little bit. I want to go back to your sports thing for a second.
Okay.
You know, because I think you're right. I think we have to talk in simple terms because a lot of the folks on the other side are very, very simple. So we need to break things down into very, very simple terms. And sports are a great way of looking at the economy. I have yet to find a sport that anyone enjoys that has no rules. Yet the people on the other side, they want an economy without any rules. They want to deregulate. They want the titans of industry to be able to do whatever they want to do without any rules. But yet I've not been able to find a sport, any sport, without any rules. Even that fighting thing that we seem to be regressing on. Boxing wasn't enough, so we need full contact, beat the crap out of each other fighting. Which, you know, I guess isn't bad for a Friday night.
Found a way, it's supposed to be ultimate no-holds-barred fighting. You know, steel cage with chainsaws.
Yep. Well, no, you see, here's the thing, there are rules.
But they've got rules, that's the point.
Exactly. Even that has rules. So, I mean, to have it, but you listen to them on the right, on the far right. They want an economy without any rules. No rules. Business should be able to do whatever business wants. If it wants to exploit its workers, it can exploit its workers. If it wants to fire a woman in Pittsburgh, or actually in Homestead, Pennsylvania, for talking to her coworkers on her time, having her arrested while shopping at the Giant Eagle, they should be able to do that.
You know what? You got to work on your Western PA accent there, Rick. I mean, you've got to... No, it's not Giant Eagle. That's how the rest of the world says it. In Western PA, you have to say, and pay attention here, John Eagle.
Okay, John Eagle.
John Eagle. I-G-G-L-E, Eagle.
Nice. But in a way, I mean, this woman was, you know, talking to her coworkers on her own time, and they had her arrested.
When did this go down?
Thrown in jail.
When did this happen?
It happened the day before yesterday. Going to have her on the program tomorrow, along with her business agent. So you're not going to want to miss tomorrow's program because, look, if they can do this to her, they can do it to any one of us.
So and I take it she's a member of the UFCW?
I believe that to be the case at this point.
So she worked at Giant Eagle, and she was on her own time. She was doing her shopping?
She was in there talking.
Or she was on her break or whatever. Yeah, okay.
Which is in their contract, from what I understand, and we're going to talk to their business agent tomorrow. But she's in there doing what contractually she's allowed to do, you know, promoting the union, talking about the contract, talking about the things that she's supposed to, and they had her walked out of there in handcuffs and arrested. There's a video at the on my Facebook thing. It's mind-blowing to me, but it happened. And it happens across this country all the time. And this is where I think we have an opportunity to reach out to the other side and say, look, you know, all of that First Amendment rights you love to, I got the right to free speech, all of that that people love to scream about, that doesn't apply when you're on private property. Your free speech is to the government. You can call up and you can scream at your representative and you can jump up and down and do all of that. You do that on private property, they will arrest you. No free speech. Fiefdom. Simple stuff, Bob.
That's
so simple, I think the right wing can understand it.
That's mind-blowing. And, of course, working where you work, Rick, up in central Pennsylvania, you're surrounded by those types, right? Those right-wing, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, right?
Right here in the heart of one of the most conservative areas in the country. And here's the thing. I truly believe that people are all the same. You give them the opportunity to understand reality. You give them the whole truth, and they will find that the truth will set them free. The sad thing about it is you look at places like this, all they've ever heard. They've never heard Bob Kincaid.
No, no.
All they had ever heard until Rick Smith flipped on the mic was Rush Limbaugh. All they had heard were Hannity and Beck and this constant drumbeat of anti-government, pro-deregulation, pro-corporate message, and they're waking up to the fact, and I hope they are, that they're getting bitten in the behind by their own rhetoric. And the stuff that they preach, leave business alone, is killing them, literally.
Because you're not exactly experiencing up there in central PA, you're not exactly experiencing an economic renaissance, are you?
No, I mean, this part of the area has got the same problems everybody has. Unemployment here is creeping up higher and higher, and you're seeing businesses leave. Where are they going? They're going further south, where states like Tennessee are giving millions of dollars away to steal jobs from the north, and you're seeing jobs going to China and India and Pakistan, and you name it, they're going, Bob. You know, what's interesting, I was just at the supermarket a minute ago, and a kid in front of me had on a shirt with Chuck Norris knows, and Chuck Norris knows this, and Chuck Norris knows that, and Chuck Norris is a good American.
Oh, Jesus.
Chuck Norris Chuck Norris loves America, made in Honduras. You figure that out, because I can't.
No, sorry. No, the steam had come out my ears, and my brain would start boiling.
And I told that to the kid. And the kid goes, well, it's made in America. Why else would Chuck sell it? I go, oh, you better check the tag. And his buddy looked at the tag. He goes, no, it says made in Honduras.
Beautiful.
Made in Honduras.
And you sort of wrangled that into a situation, Rick, where his friend had to validate you.
Yes.
You're sneaky.
Well, no, I see anybody I see with the jingoistic T-shirts on, be it the American flag or the Constitution that they love to plaster all over everything.
But
I
have never read.
But I have to ask them if they know where the shirt was made. Or any of the thing, the flag that they're carrying, or the pot with the flag painted on it. Because rarely is it made in the U.S. What you may find is the T-shirt was made in Guatemala and printed in the U.S. You find that quite often. But never do you, at least I have yet to find somebody with a T-shirt made in America and printed in America with the flag on it. That when I ask somebody. Now, the Rick Smith Show T-shirts are all union-made, all American-made. I make sure of that, and my listeners know that.
That is, and I mean, you really do. You walk the walk. You talk the talk, but you walk the walk. Because for those who haven't listened and those who don't know, you're a union teamster. This isn't just something you think is a nice idea. You can actually give empirical data on the difference between the union life versus the non-union life.
I think it's better than empirical.
Okay.
I grew up in a housing project. We were on the ground that they put the socioeconomic ladder on. We weren't even on the ladder. We were the spot where they put the ladder on. If it weren't for welfare, if it weren't for health, medical insurance from the government, I would probably be dead today. but through my hard work and a union contract that ensured that I got decent wages, decent benefits, I've been able to pull myself out of that. And yes, I pulled myself out of poverty with the help of my government, with the help of my union, with the help of my friends, my family. I didn't do it myself. No Horatio Alger story here. I did it with the help of a lot of people.
It took a village.
That's exactly right. It took a community. And I know the right-wingers love that Horatio Alger pulled myself up by my bootstraps. But the reality is I didn't have any bootstraps.
Well, it's hard work. And you know what? We live in an America where the right wing will not be happy until everybody not only has no bootstraps, Rick, but until America has no boots. You know, I get so sick of that. Every now and then you'll still catch one of those the Reaganific freaks who will say, well, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. And I always look at him and say, what the hell do you do if you don't have a boat? Because that's where America finds itself.
Well, I mean, wasn't that the whole argument that Clinton also made for his buying into neoliberal trade policy? I mean, really, wasn't that his rationale for signing NAFTA, that we're all going to be better off together? We're going to rise Mexico out of poverty. And what actually happened? You knew what was going to happen when he did it, but he didn't. I don't know. I don't think he knew. I think he was naive in that fact. But look at what's going on. Mexico is much worse off. The United States, the working class of the United States is much worse off. But who's better? Well, Wall Street was much, much better, and the very, very wealthy are enormously better. But you and I and the people of Mexico, you want to talk about redistribution of wealth, Bob? The wealth has been redistributed from the people of Mexico and the working class of this country straight up to about 1% of the people in this country.
Oh, that's like I sat down the other day, and I've told people about it all week, and we've talked it to death, and I'm done with it. But I sat down and watched White Stock from New York from D.C. with Glenn Beck last Saturday. And, yeah, I know. But I came up with what I distilled what I thought was the ultimate descriptor for what that was. It was living proof that the right wing does believe in wealth redistribution. And in that case, the redistribution was done from the credulous to the creepy. You just have to, they believe in it, they just want to define how it happens. I can't for the life of me, Rick, fathom a people or a demographic segment or whatever, a psychographic, that's a really important word I learned, a psychographic that believes that they're better off when they get more of their money taken from them and handed to the people who already have enough. I can't figure it.
Well, here's the thing, and there's a rationale for this, Bob. There's a rationale. Because they honestly and truthfully believe, and hear me when I tell you this, they honestly and truthfully believe that if they give tax money that's going to poor people, it's going to help those black people. Did you see many black faces in that crowd, other than the paid ones that were on stage?
No, you could have counted the black folks actually in the crowd on one hand and kept the mitten on the other one.
Exactly. But here's the thing. You know, and I've got friends who, you know, they call them, they think they're the most Christian people in the world. And they believe in helping the poor. But, boy, if we give something to the government to help people with, well, you're helping those people. And, of course, those people, in this area anyway, is code for black people or minorities. And, you know, to me, I'm kind of missing the whole Christian thing then, because I thought God made everybody. Maybe in their book it's a little different. Maybe I got a misprint.
No, it's just the secret conserva Bible that they're not sharing. That's the one where Jesus has the M16, Rick. And it says that, you know, it doesn't say suffer the little children to come unto me. It says, come on, y'all, let's make him little children suffer. It's a sad and twisted thing. But no, I mean, no, the problem is you're talking about more of that liberation theology that the right wing don't want no part of. Can't have no liberating. I think maybe they're afraid that there are going to be, you know, slavery reparations involved or, oh, Jesus.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not, you know, I'm not, I'm not even going to get into the whole reparations thing because I don't think it's something we should be handing out checks to people. But I do think we should have an infrastructure to help everybody rise out of their situation. I look at myself again. Had it not been for our government, there was one time I had an asthma attack in the hospital for 2 weeks, could have died. Health insurance from our government saved my life. I remember that. My mother would get food stamps, put food on the table because most of the time our cupboards were bare. If I had to live in conserva world, there would be nothing in those cupboards ever. Because the 1970s, I'm sure you know, were not a friendly time for single mothers.
Oh, no.
Not at all.
They weren't very friendly to the nuclear family either. But by far and away, yes, not friendly at all for the single mom. And remember, you know, just while we're taking account of all of this, in the new regressivism, you know, they're not conservatisms, they're regressives. We're progressives, they're regressives. And they want to go back to that kind of stuff. They like it. They like an era where the person who isn't mean enough and fierce enough and hateful enough and mercenary enough and self-centered enough just gets to die.
Yep.
The fact of the matter is though, whether it's you where you were or my dad getting thrown out of his job at 55 years of age, you know, that suddenly has more relevance for me because it won't be long till I'm that old.
Yep.
And I've got a real sense for, you know, I mean, he was screwed when that happened to him in the 70s. You know, 40 years on a furnace or 35 years on a furnace. And then see you, Charlie.
Let's fast forward that to today, Bob. The people who are 50, 55 years old today, the white guy who'd been a union member for years, who got thrown out of his job, today's teabagger for the most part.
Yeah.
The same thing. And this idea that there's this benevolent corporation out there who's going to just embrace us with open, happy, loving arms and going to take care of us is pure and utter nonsense. They are going to use you, they are going to abuse you, and then they are going to do what they've been doing, kick you to the curb.
And good luck to you. Laurel and Hardy handshake. Not even a watch.
It's that gold watch is gone. You'd be lucky to get one of those kids play ones that come 12 for a buck and the thing that...
Right, the Bart Simpson one from Burger King from a few years back. Right.
You'd be lucky to get that. And they don't give you a pat on the back anymore. They just head you to the door.
But you know what? The fact of the matter is, we had a jobs report out today. I don't know if you noticed that or not. I'm sure you did. You pay attention to all of this stuff. It was not encouraging to say the least. I get these updates from our buddy Scott Paul.
Yep, it's not encouraging, Bob. And do you know why it's not encouraging?
Because
it's not encouraging because the corporate masters don't want it to be encouraging.
Right.
Profits are up. Wall Street's back. Bonuses are flowing. CEOs are fat and happy. They're just holding on. They know that Obama and our government is the only thing that stands in their way to unimaginable wealth. And they're going to make sure that anything he does is taken down so that we in the working class learn our place.
The August unemployment report said that we lost 27,000 jobs in manufacturing. That's not all the jobs we lost. That's just the jobs in manufacturing, Rick. That's those middle class jobs that made that happy leave it to beaver world that the right wing wants so desperately to go back to. And yet they don't want the things that made that world possible. And it's frightening. It's terrifying. The bosses don't want it. But let me just add this: the bosses don't want it. But our side isn't helping matters any by virtue of the fact that the present administration seems to think that having a manufacturing policy or an industrial policy is somehow gauche.
Well, I'm going to agree with you on that, but here's the thing. The problem is not that we're losing jobs. If you ask any good right-winger, ask any good teabagger, and they will tell you, The problem with our economy is not that we're losing jobs or we haven't created any new jobs. The problem is that we have those people here. Those people are taking the desirable jobs. Those people are here.
The desirable jobs?
Those
good UAW jobs or those good steel worker jobs.
No, those good toilet cleaning jobs.
Oh, the good lettuce picking jobs.
Yeah, those good jobs. Those are the jobs that evidently they want because they want to throw all the people out who are doing it. They want a big bus to drive all around the country and take everybody back because they think that that's how our economy is going to get jump started.
I'm going to love it when I'm 52 years old and we've sent all the Mexicans back and I'm hanging out in the parking lot of Lowe's waiting for a $3 an hour job. That I can't do.
Yeah, they want to build this giant fence, and we don't have anybody to build it. John McCain said, we're going to finish the dying fence. Yeah, we're going to use Mexican labor to do it, I guess.
Yeah, and then our predator drones will periodically attack weddings taking place by it.
Well, did you see the one story a couple of weeks ago? The predator drone was over Washington airspace?
No.
Kind of just flew off course. Oops. Headed into airspace over Washington.
Oh, you mean Tyler, who spent the first 14 years of his formative life playing video games and then went into the Air Force and got to fly predator drones out of some installation in the underside of a mountain? He took his eye off of it for a second to check his Facebook and his Twitter, and the thing flew over Washington?
No, evidently it just flew off. They don't know how. From what the story said, they haven't figured out how it got out of control. I'm sure you're probably right. But according to the story, it just kind of went off on its own.
Yeah, wait a minute. I'll do the bombing run in a minute. I got my girlfriend's tweeting me. I'm getting a text. Jesus.
Yeah, well, I got to update my Facebook page, right?
Yeah, right. You and I are of a fairly similar age. I remember pumping handfuls of quarters into a Williams brand Defender video game machine down to the Pancake House. Late nights because they stayed open all night, and we derelict juvenile delinquents in training would hang out there, and play Defender, and I remember one of my more
I love that game.
Yeah, and with the little aliens, they always just wasted my ass, just and I was done in another quarter.
And Galaga and Phoenix, those were my two favorites.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm really dating myself.
Well, we both are. But the fact of the matter is, I had a very perceptive friend who looked at me one evening, and he said, "You know what?" And I said, "What?" And he says, "They're just training us." "For what? Is it time to go home? Have you had too much?" "No, they're just training us. They're just this is the warfare of the future, man. And we're paying them so that we can learn how to do it in the future." Damned if it didn't turn out to be right, Rick.
Yeah, it's scary stuff. You know, all those sci-fi books we read as kids. Man, who would have thought that was just reality? That was the life to come. And who would have thought 1984 was going to come to fruition?
Yeah, and, 20 years late, who can blame George Orwell for being off a digit in his math?
Exactly. it's scary stuff. But here's the thing. We have the ability to stand up and to fight back. It's going to take people coming together, though. And here in central Pennsylvania, I'm excited by the fact that finally people are starting to wake up to the reality that we've got to get back to basic grassroots organizing. We've got to get out into the media. We've got to get the people where they are. And for the Rick Smith Show, what we've been doing for the last 5 years, this weekend we're celebrating our fifth anniversary. What's funny is they told me I wouldn't last 6 months. Here I am 5 years later, and the guy who told me it has been fired by five different stations down the road. So there you go, buddy.
Is that the same guy that Howard Stern called pig vomit?
just like him. I think they were brothers, man. But the reality is here we're going to be Labor Day. We're going to be expanding to a 7-day-a-week program. We're going to continue our Saturday and Sunday noon to two program.
Hey, wait! You didn't give me a time. You didn't give me a chance to fire up the fanfare. Now you're doing it. Well, go on.
All right, well, here's the thing. I got to get to it because this is exciting stuff. Monday through Friday, 9 to midnight, we're going to be running our program. And next week, exclusive on the horn, we're going to do the first week, 9 o'clock all the way through. Monday through Friday at 9 o'clock, we will be on the horn exclusively. And the following week, we will be on a couple of FM stations here in central Pennsylvania, a couple of AM stations as well. Here's why I'm doing this. I think the horn listeners are some of the smartest people, some of the best talk radio people in the country. They understand that this is political theater. The right wing has been training their people for decades on how to get the message out, on how to be talk radio callers. We can do the same thing. In this area, when your listeners call my program and hopefully become my listeners, the people in this listening area, their minds are going to explode because they'll have never heard what the callers are going to say. They'll never heard a program like ours. And this is exciting stuff because we have the ability to reach into people's minds and challenge them. And I think we're gonna be able to do that. Bob.
God, you are talking some truth, Rick Smith. You are talking some truth because one of the things that I've argued all along is that one of the direct results of us, of liberals, progressives, whatever we care to call ourselves, one of the absolute truths is that the right wing has created, by virtue of our side's unwillingness to be in the medium. The right wing has created a playing field in which there's only one side to root for, and everybody wants to be a winner, right? So if there's no competing ideas, you just naturally gravitate over to the right side.
Yep, and there's so many times, and I don't know if you hear this or not, but I hear it all the time. Rick, I like you, you're a decent guy, but nobody's saying what you're saying. So how can that be true? Everything we hear is, if we deregulate business, everything will be wonderful. If we let business, if we give them huge tax breaks, the economy will be smoking. Nobody's saying the things that you're saying, Rick. Why is that? Well, there are a couple of reasons. One, the media is controlled by corporations. And two, the big advertisers who put on the programs like Beck, the $32 million man, and Limbaugh, the $50 million man, they want anti-government, pro-corporate messaging. And that's what they get for their big money. But we have an opportunity at the grassroots. Look, I'm not making $1 million. I barely make 50 grand myself. But it's getting out there, doing the hard work of organizing. But more importantly, getting people to think.
Exactly. And this is a great opportunity for a little bit of that political theater you were talking about, Rick, because when horn listeners, and God, I hope they do, when horn listeners call in, and they're heard on those FM stations and AM stations or wherever in central Pennsylvania, and you are the only liberal voice there. And they hear horn callers calling in. They won't know if they're from next door or across the street or across the county or across the country. They'll just know that all of a sudden there's a bunch of liberals. And they might.
Oh, my God, they're among us.
Right. Zombies! No.
Run for the guns!
Exactly. And but the beautiful thing is, they might stop and listen.
That's right.
And if they do...
And that's what's important.
Yeah, and you know, there's a post over at Crooks and Liars today by a guy by the name of Brad Reed, and it's called Smart and Dumb Ways to Trash Your Enemies, and he... apparently there's this person named Jamel Bowie, who has decided that, you know, it's not nice to say ugly things about the other side. We have to use persuasion and reason and common sense. Well, you know what?
What you need to do is you need to smack people in the mouth. And the reason, well, I don't mean to cut you off, but this infuriates me when I hear this bizarre, weak, soft, pansy, liberal nonsense. We need to win over with our ideas. No, you need to stand for something first. And stand on your principle. Don't, you know, when Dick Cheney said the Democrats will cave, they always do, he was right.
And when he said go F yourself to Pat Leahy ran away like he'd been smacked.
Exactly. What we need, and again, you know, this is, you know, people say, I'll give you a quick story. I'm in the bank, and this guy recognizes me because I said, you know, the Rick Smith Show, and I needed to deposit a check. And he comes out to the parking lot and wants to start a fight. Because he thinks that I'm some soft, weak, pacifist-type liberal.
Had he never met or seen you before?
No, he'd never met or seen me before, and he started poking his finger at me, and he poked me in the chest, and, kind of trying to bait me, and I said, buddy, I don't know if you really listened to me, but I'm no pacifist. I'm 6'3", 300 pounds. I will beat you within an inch of your life, heal you, and then do it again. Before the police get here. And he got this look on his face like, uh-oh. I think I did something wrong. And he ran off.
And that's what they do. That's what they do. Dear Jesus, that's what they do, Rick. If you stand up to them, they run away because in their heart of hearts, they are cowards.
But here's the thing. They feel that they're the majority. They feel because...
Because they've been told that they are.
Exactly. But they've been so badly skewed mentally that they think they're the majority. That their backward, twisted view of this country is what the majority of people are thinking. You know, the Tea Party thinks that everybody's a teabagger. The reality is they're a very small segment of the population.
Right, and yet the for-profit media, amplifies them into a juggernaut. And I guess I'm guilty of it too, to a certain extent. But the way that I talk about them is to let people know how idiotic they are. How simple they are. You know, Simon Simple and Simon Pure.
Yep.
But
I felt sorry for at Beckapalooza.
Who's that?
Because I did watch a little bit of Beckapalooza myself. I felt sorry for my girlfriend. Because I'm officially in love with Michelle Bachmann. She was not invited.
Ooh.
I really do. I really felt sorry for Michelle Bachmann. Because I think she was snubbed.
Well, Caribou Barbie won't appear on the same stage with her.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
See, I thought the two of them were like, peas and carrots.
But I felt the same. I felt the same way though, Rick, because, you know, we had done Matt Osborne created a beautiful, awesome video that went with it. We had done a deconstruction of this stump speech that she's doing around the country, where she talks about this World War II freighter that was torpedoed by a U-2 submarine. And I know. It takes the words right, sucks the words right out of your mouth, doesn't it? Yeah, U-2 submarine. And with all of that historical revisionism and Glenn Beck folding and making a paper airplane out of George Washington's first inaugural speech and stars on the Lincoln Monument, and there's an 8-year-old George Washington wandering in the crowd with wooden teeth and all of that stuff, that U-2 submarine would have gone over great, but damn it, Caribou Barbie had to ruin it for everybody.
Que sera.
But you know, you're absolutely right. When you stand up to the bullies run away because they are at their hearts cowards. You know, it's like Pat Leahy. You know, is Pat? You know, have the Democrats in the Senate been there so long that they think they're civilized and that they think the Republicans are nice people? Because when Dick Cheney, there's only one answer to Dick Cheney. When Dick Cheney looks at Pat Leahy and says "F you," the answer by Pat Leahy is to look back at Dick Cheney and say, if you could, you'd give up women.
No, the response would, for me, the response would have been a blast to the snobs. I'd have fixed that nose problem he's got.
Yeah, no kidding.
At the end of it. I mean, and that's what the Democrats have to come back to doing. They've got to have a spine. They've got to stand on their principles. And none of this wish, and this is my problem with Obama, to be honest with you. I really hoped that he would be a strong leader. The problem is Democrats don't seem to have a strong leader. Find me Tom DeLay in a Democratic version. Dig up LBJ if you have to. Get me somebody who's going to stand up and say, this is what I believe, and screw you if you don't follow me. That's what we need.
Lead, follow, or get out of the way. And the answer is not get out of the way.
Get out of my way before I kick you in the behind. But, you know, that's what it's got to be. And for too long, Democrats have been viewed as soft. Anybody who's been viewed as a liberal, you're just a fancy pants, latte drinking, Volvo driving, you know.
Liberal. Oh, remember when they told us that we wanted to have a get in touch with our feelings session with Al-Qaeda? Oh, Jesus. But again, those things get out there because there's not enough of us out there.
That's right. Which is why 3 hours a night, Monday through Friday, 2 hours on Saturday, 2 hours on Sunday, I am going to be bringing my brand of no-nonsense, in-your-face talk to the radio waves, not only here in central Pennsylvania, but also on the Horn, because I think the Horn is vitally important, and I really believe that the Horn can take control of Internet talk radio.
I absolutely do. Well, you know, and in large part, we have from time to time. There was a time when we had as much original programming as Air America. And I want to get back to that again. Because we are the last man standing, Rick.
Comes back to investment.
Pardon?
Comes back to investment.
Yes, it does.
Comes back to labor organizations investing in messaging. It comes back to environmental groups. It comes back to Horn listeners who say, you know what? I only got $10. I know Bob Kincaid can use the money, so throw me $10 to help keep this on the air. All of that stuff, that's what it takes.
Yeah, we've got a little experiment going this month, Rick. You know, the Horn audience measures in the thousands. But the fact is, last month it increased a little bit. But the fact of the matter is, of the thousands of people who listen to the Horn, about 50 of them are the ones who carry the network for everybody else. And so this month, as an experiment, since we're right at the beginning of the month, we're looking for 250 people to send $10. And then I can shut up for the month. If every listener sent $10, I could shut up for, you know, months. Because the struggle is, and I think you'll agree, because it has not been a bed of roses for you in the 5 years you've been on the air to keep yourself going. And we won't get into the particulars, but the fact of the matter is, we have to prove that this is real, that it can survive, that it can be popular. And once we do that, then the job becomes one of convincing the people with the money that, you know, look, we're not doing this because we have this insane masochistic desire to get behind the microphone for 3 hours every night and just, you know, watch everything crumble around us. And it's not because, you know, we're egomaniacs like the right wing has. Like you said, you know, you're not getting $50 million a year. You don't live in a 26,000 square foot mansion with a cat.
I'd like to, but it's never going to happen because here's the reality. The reality is our views are not overly profitable. They're profitable. We want business to succeed, but we want business to share their wealth with the rest of us, the people who actually create the wealth. The right wing, you know, the people who are going to sponsor somebody like Beck or Limbaugh or Hannity or any of them, there's a big return for them. Anti-government, smaller government, less restriction. The more that they can, you know, the more they can exploit workers, the more they can exploit the environment. It's a win-win for corporations, the deep pockets that fund people like Limbaugh, $50 million a year. So when he says, I'm the defender of corporate America, understand, he is the defender of corporate America.
Yeah, he ain't playing. No, he really is.
He doesn't care about you or me or anybody else. He worries about who's paying his check. That's it. And I get people saying, well, you know, Rush Limbaugh's wealthy. No, Rush is rich, and there's a difference. And the best way I ever heard it put to me, you know, you think Shaquille O'Neal's wealthy, right? No, he's just rich. The guy who signs Shaquille O'Neal's check, he's wealthy. And the same thing with Limbaugh. Limbaugh's got a couple shackles in his pocket, but it's the guy who's paying him, keeping him on the string. He's the guy making all the money.
And the whole point is that there are, you know, the think tanks out there have poured money into right-wing radio.
Oh. You know what's interesting? I believe this to be true, and I've seen it a couple of times, that the radio factor, Bill O'Reilly's little radio factor, never actually made a dime.
No.
They made no profit in all the years he was on radio. In fact, they actually lost money.
And it's the only one they ever pulled the plug on.
Right. Well, he wanted out.
That's the thing. And well, that was where I was going. They pulled the plug on the radio factor because Bill O'Reilly didn't want to do it anymore. He was working too much.
Yeah, and I think he only did 2 hours a day, if I remember right.
Yeah, but that was too much. He wants to make the same millions doing the same crappy hour of television once at 1 hour a night.
Man, how do you get that gig?
How do you get the Beck gig? How do you get the Hannity gig? You know, no, you just asked the $64 million question. How you get that gig is you have somebody who is willing to, who has enough money to burn a herd of wet elephants and doesn't give a damn and is willing to prove it by losing money to put out their ideas. See, that's the funny thing. Ultimately, if you examine right-wing versus left-wing broadcasting, what you find out is that the real fiscal conservatives are on the liberal side, Rick.
Yep.
Because the right wing spends money like drunken sailors on liberty. On this medium, our side said no. You know, we don't want to be like them.
Well, yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
We want to get our message out as well as they have done, and you've got to give credit where credit is due. They have done a remarkable job of following their game plan. Honestly and truthfully,
it is, and they have done it on multiple levels, from the people who bought the radio stations, to the networks that crafted the programming, to the wealthy people who subsidized every last damn bit of it. I mean, they understood everything, and then, you know, the salespeople who went out and found those vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls to drop on Swedish mattresses that you can lay on and get an herbal erection.
with survivor seeds, of course, eating food made with survivor seeds.
Absolutely. Well,
they're not seeds anymore. They're survivor seeds because we've allowed Monsanto and all the chemical companies to so badly pervert our food industry that you can't even have it. You can't go to the store and buy seeds anymore that are going to be multi-generational. Because we have Terminator seeds now.
It won't grow back.
You know, you think of how bad we've screwed ourselves by allowing business to do what they want. You know, I had somebody ask me recently why I'm against legalizing marijuana. And not for any moralistic reason. My concern is that once we allow corporate America to get their hands on marijuana, it will be the most addictive thing ever created, much worse than cigarettes. And it will take you tons of it to get that high like you had the first time. And you'll spend every dime of your money and you'll be hooked to no end.
Yeah, it'll be me and my cigarette habit all over again. No, that's actually a novel approach. I had not heard that point made that way.
Well, that's what scares me. I could care less. Bob, you want to smoke pot? You go right on ahead.
Well, thank you. I will. No.
Or anybody else. You know, what you do in the confines of your home with consenting adults.
Not behind a wheel.
Not behind the wheel, but in your home with consenting adults. Do what you got to do. That's all I got. You want to do it with midgets and monkeys? God bless you. You know, nothing against midgets or monkeys, but, you know, God bless you.
Right.
Or whoever you worship, you know, Allah or the Buddha or the big giant bowl of spaghetti.
Flying spaghetti monster. He's my deity of choice because, you know, I know that when I die, I get to go to a heaven that's comprised of a beer volcano and a stripper factory. Who wouldn't want it?
Yes. I'm right there with you.
Just rolling off the line every day.
That's what we're going to be doing, Bob. We're Monday, Labor Day, 9 o'clock, right here on the horn. We are going to be broadcasting to your listeners exclusively. We want to make them our listeners as well, and we're going to give them the opportunity in the coming weeks and months.
Right, because you're working, you know, you're working the same vibe. You're working the conversation vibe. It's not so much that you want those people in central Pennsylvania to hear you. You want them to hear...
I want them to hear everybody. I want them to hear something that makes them think. And that's the key to this, because you talk to... I have a lot of conversations with people who are very good at spewing platitudes. They're very good at talking points. They're very good at trying to explain what Limbaugh said, but the second you ask that first question, it all falls apart because they have no idea what he was talking about. But it sounded good. That's where the conversation part comes in.
Yeah. Got to get government off our backs.
Yeah, but like that guy in Missouri. with the big 48-foot trailer with the sign that said, "Are you a producer or a parasite, Democrats?" Question mark. Here's a guy who took $1 million in farm subsidies. So it's an interesting question. Are you a producer or a parasite?
Yeah, Michelle Bachmann, she hates her some farm subsidies, except for the ones that she got.
Yep. Amazing stuff.
Funny how that works, isn't it?
It is funny.
But it's just like the welfare thing. Welfare is something that only people with dark skin get, no matter the actual factual reality that the vast majority of welfare recipients in this country are, come on, let's all say it, white folks.
Well, I was, you know, as a kid, I'm not ashamed to say it because it saved my life. I'm one of those people who, had it not been for food stamps, we would have starved. And this nonsense, all the churches. Well, let's go to the churches. You know what? I remember the churches, and I remember them looking down on you, and I remember them saying, "Oh, well, you know what? We're going to give to these people over here because we like them better." I remember that shenanigans that went on, and I remember them stealing from the church donations that were supposed to go to the poor so that they could have a little more. No, thank you. I've seen the church rot. No, thank you. I want a boring, simple government agency saying, even straight across the board, here's how we're going to help. Simple.
Not real hard to figure out.
Nope. But people need to understand it. They need to hear. And this ridiculous notion, and I get this all the time, you just want everybody to be equal. You want people to get something for nothing. You think you're entitled to, you know, to equal stuff, and you don't want to work for anything. I go, what are you talking about? I've worked my butt off all these years. I've worked 70, 80, 100 hours a week to get where I'm at. And I expect everybody to work hard. But there are some people who are just unlucky. There are some people who are in a bad situation, and they need a helping hand. And that, my friend, is what we should be doing.
It's not much of an America if we're not, is it?
Not at all. Well, I mean, but here's the thing. You know, if the bottom raises up, like the boat analogy, we all do better.
Well, and you know, there's actually some science behind it. There's some economics behind it. You know, when the government gives out money, let's say the government gives, a giant bailout to the banks versus giving, table scraps for, and we didn't really get around to doing it, you know, for people on unemployment. Or for food stamps. You might recall that food stamps, which saved your life, recently got cut in order to prop up Medicaid and state salaries, you know. And the things got, they needed to be propped up, Rick, but dadgummit, you don't save the cow by bleeding the cow. And that's what we did. Instead of putting a penny tax, how about a penny tax on all Wall Street transactions? A penny.
I'm in favor of that.
But instead, we slashed the just a little nick in the cow's throat so that the cow could keep giving milk. But anyway, all of those things that go to the poor, are the single best economic stimulus that the government can do with its money. And the only reason we don't do it more vigorously is because of that segment of misinformed, maleducated human beings out there who have been told for 20 years, 30 maybe, depending on who they were listening to, that welfare is you know, what you said.
Personally, I'm against welfare programs. I think we should have all work programs because I do believe that there's dignity in work. I do believe there are some therapeutic qualities to actually going to work and earning your way. And I'm in favor of going back to a CCC or a WPA to make sure that people have that ability to go to work and support their families.
Yeah, those crappy uniforms that my Mountaineers are going to wear.
Yeah.
Why couldn't we make those in the United States?
Because we can get them for 6 cents cheaper overseas.
Precisely.
And bigger profits for the corporation. That's what it's about. I mean, come on. When you boil it down to simple, the brass tacks, it's about the rich guy putting more coin in his pocket and the hell with you. That's all it's about, Bob. And that's what we're fighting back against. And that's why I'm excited Monday at 9 o'clock We are going to be on the horn exclusively for the next week to make sure that, the horn listeners have an opportunity to get to know me, to get to know the program, and to feel comfortable interacting, because this is a relationship we're building. And like any good relationship, we're courting your listeners to come participate in our program.
Hear, hear. And I think it's going to be a wonderful thing. I'll be on the air on Monday night, and we'll make sure and remind everybody what's coming. And
I hope they do stick around, because we're going to have a great show. It's going to be about Labor Day and labor issues, and just because it is Labor Day. But we want to begin that conversation, and I think it's going to be a great relationship, and I think we're all going to do much better.
Hear, hear. And by the way, John Fox just shot me a note saying it's absolutely his pleasure to be working with you and helping engineer up the studio, and that he absolutely loves your vibe.
And you know, here's the thing: you have built, and I tell people this all the time, you have built a second to none operation. It's just a shame that we can't, and we're working on it, to make sure that we can make a living for people who are doing this, and make a good living, a living wage for everybody doing this, because it's so important. And I think we're getting the ears. I think we're getting the people to finally understand that they're getting beat up, and Beck is able to bring 87,000 people out, even though he said 500,000, and I heard a million, and I heard 16.
Well, that's miracle math made easy.
But you know, I could see somebody sent me a picture of it, and it looked like half of the crowd was, you know, on the half of the lawn there, bright sunny in bikinis, and on the other side, you know, kind of a dreary dark day with parkas on. So I'm not sure if that's a real picture or,
Well, I just know that I was waiting. I just wanted somebody to run into the reflecting pool screaming, "Forrest! Forrest!" Rick Smith, it's going to be a blast, and of course you're going to be the ultimate concrete Charlie for a while now, doing 7 days a week. Even I don't have that kind of guts.
Well, here's the thing, you know, somebody's right now. I've got the microphone, I've got the ability to do it, and we're taking the bull by the horns, and we are going to absolutely begin to fight back, because this election is extremely important, but 2012 is really, really important. And that's why we're building for, not only for now, but for 2 years from now.
Wow, long-term thinking.
Yeah, imagine that.
That's a beautiful thing. Rick Smith, you are a hero of mine, my friend. And you're going to be kicking ass and taking names. And I am so proud that you are finally going to 5 days a week. This is, in my opinion, and I understand the exigencies that have swirled around it, but this is long overdue. I will say to you, and I will say to the entire Horn family, that you are, bar none, among the best at what you do in this country, and you deserve to be heard more widely. And to the extent that the Horn can, take steps to make that happen, by God, it is my pride, my joy, and my honor to do it, and our honor.
I appreciate it, Bob. Thank you so much. And we're going to be working together a lot in the coming months, and I'm excited about that.
I think it's going to be a bunch of fun. It is exciting. Rick Smith, take care.
Thanks so much, Bob.
All right. Bye now. There you hear it. Rick Smith coming your way on the horn 5 days a week. Well, 7 days a week. What am I kidding? Who am I kidding? 9 to midnight, Monday through Friday. Noon to 2 on Saturdays and Sundays. This is the kind of nose-to-the-grindstone stuff that will build this infrastructure, that has the potential, at least, if it is supported, to change the way America thinks. You know, a lot of liberals and progressives like to rub their little hands together and, you know, how did we get here? What happened to America? What? And they wind up sounding like Beaker from the Muppets. Well, there's an answer. America got here because the other side gets it, and with the exception of you and some others, our side doesn't. And helping the part of our side that doesn't get it to begin getting it is everything in the world to creating
that change that millions upon millions of Americans with their votes said that they wanted. The fact is, change never comes from the top down. It doesn't. Some direction can happen from the top down. Some leadership can happen from the top down occasionally. But you don't build buildings by starting with the capstone and hanging it in the air and putting the building under it. Well, you dig footers. You dig foundations. And you make them strong and sturdy so that they cannot be shaken. This is that. I know there are a considerable number of other folks out there doing liberal talk radio. But you know what? I'm proud to say that Rick Smith is among the best. The Talkers Magazine Heavy 100 of people who are on terrestrial radio, he should have been on it for 5 years. But this year, he's going to be doing 5 days a week, and by God, he should be on it by year's end, because there is no one better at what he does than Rick Smith is. And for those of you who have noted that yes, this is the same slot as Mike Malloy. It is. And just to let you know, it was not chosen that way. I think Rick would have preferred a different slot. So would I. But this is a matter of liberals trying to get on the air, and this is the time slot that was made available to Rick. No other slot. So this is not competition. I don't believe in that. Mike Malloy remains and will always remain the absolute king of this genre, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many others, almost in the entirety of the Horn family. You know, David in Tennessee adding, he says, let's just hope our leaders will jump in front of the right parade when they do decide to lead. And that's the whole point. We're the ones who are forming the parade. You, me, us, we. There's not a parade until we put the parade together. A little shout out to our buddy Hernan from Argentina. He just popped into the chat room. He does all of Malloy's gallery at YouTube. Hernan's a real good guy, and we're glad to have him popping in. I love hearing from folks in other countries, because it's so vitally interesting and fascinating and actually necessary to have the perspective of people who are outside of this nation looking back at us, because we're inside it. And sometimes we can't see what they can see. So please, I will be here Monday night, regular show, right on time. I sincerely hope you will be as well. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. You got a little dose of Rick this evening. Check him out live on the Horn at noon Eastern Time, Saturday and Sunday. And by all means, be here Monday night. And give Rick a warm, warm welcome. And let's get this thing tuned up so that those folks who have, look, this is like Radio Free Europe during the Cold War. You get that? This really is. You will be talking across the conserva curtain into a place that has never heard anything but Tass and Pravda and Izvestia. and there's no jamming going on. You have a chance to do something that very few have the opportunity to do. In a place like Central Pennsylvania, this is a wake-up call that they have needed for years, and it is entirely within your power to provide it. John Fox and I will be working with Rick over the weekend to get the studio all up and ready. I remember when we did that. You know, this particular operation will soon be 6 years old. We'll have our sixth anniversary on October the 24th. And I remember how exciting it was. And I also remember how terrifying. It doesn't work! Yes, it does. You've punched the wrong button, dummy. I remember. And I remember all the times that John Fox has brought me down out of the trees. John, it's not working. Yes, it is, Bob. Breathe. Be part of the excitement. Be part of the actual creation of the future that may, you know, I get a little gloomy sometimes, and I wonder, like I said last night, have we passed that tipping point? And sometimes I think we have, but the only chance that we have, is to make the effort. We can't sit around anymore and wait for somebody else to do it, because we saw what that got us, and it got us where we are. The only way that we turn all of this around and begin making the steady progress back toward where America needs to be for the generation of people who are too young to even know what's going on is to begin building now. I know we love instant gratification, but this is not instant gratification time. This is the thing that you get. You know, I told Agnes the other day, I'd been mowing grass, and I was hot and sweaty and nasty and covered in grass clippings from the weed eater and stuff. And I cracked open a beer, and I took a drink, and I said, you know, honey, the beer you earn tastes so much better than the beer you want. And it's the truth with what I'm talking about here. You can labor in the soil and plant your seeds, and you don't get your garden vegetables overnight. You labor over them, and you water them, and you weed them, and you tend them. And if you put in all the work, you have a bounteous harvest. But it doesn't happen if you don't tend the seeds. These are the seeds. Can we tend them? Is this struggle worth it? It's not about me. It's not about Rick Smith. It's not about the horn. I want to be a footnote in history someday. Really, I do. Bob Kincaid, John Fox, Ben Birch, Lottie, Jean, Susan, Betsy, Matt, David, Peter Godbold, Joe Vecchio, Guy James, Billy Shears started something that began a sea change in America. I'd like to be that footnote. I'd like for us to be that footnote. You know, a long time ago, I said, when we started the horn, John and I had a conversation, John Fox and I. And I said, man, I don't want to be Elvis. I want to be the Beatles. I don't want to be one guy. I want to be part of something that's bigger, greater than the sum of its parts. And we're still trying to do that. And you are part of that group that is greater than the sum of its parts. You, with your voices, reaching into a place like Central Pennsylvania, are part of the beginning of a groundswell. So like I said, I'll be here Monday night, and in exchange for that, I'm taking a little early time off this evening. Time to go start a fire in the smoker. And maybe have a swig of that beer that I didn't just want, that maybe I earned. All of this happens here because of you. Because of you. And because of the kind and persistent and dedicated support of the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and CoalRiverWind.org. They get it, you see. They understand that the message is important to the work. They get it. A little something different for the close of the show this evening. A little something different. Gina, it's all for you.
There's no power in pride. My pride will take you down every time. How did the World Trade Center and the Pentagon getting all blown to hell make somebody feel the need to print up 10 or 15 million Power of Pride stickers? Well, sure, there's the profit angle. I know some creep made millions off What Would Jesus Do? I like those Who Would Jesus Bomb lapel pins. When did pride get crossed off the list of deadly sins? Or was that just another law passed by some old men back in the first century A.D. to keep the people in their place? There's no power in pride. Pride is a man who goes to war to save face. Pride is a man who cannot tell the truth that might make him look weak. There's no power in pride. Our sin is pride, and we know it. We just can't bear to talk about it. We paste those stickers right next to the Jesus fish we bought down at the Christian store. I'm not bashing Jesus, but how about we read what Jesus said for once? I say for balance we take in a little Buddha. Johnny Cash. America is the land of the free on paper, my friend. There's still hope because we've yet to reach the promised land. We have lots of work to do, sisters and brothers, and pride will only set us back. There's no power in pride. Pride will take you down every time. There's no power in pride. Pride will take you down every time. Thank you.
This is the Horn, the head-on radio network. America's liberal voice. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com.
And a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Goodness, it is my favorite day of the week. It is Monday. Why is it my favorite day of the week? Because after 2 days of enforced silence, well, I'm ready to get back behind the microphone and get back after it, doggone it. And don't we have plenty to work with tonight? Oh, my God, the weekend was like a gift from the gods. If, that is, the gods are in charge of... Oh, I don't know. If the gods are in charge of, yeah, morons! Yes, indeedy. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Get over here. Stop fiddle farting around with the cotton candy and the candy apples. You're never going to shoot out all that. Shoot that target out, that little red star with that crooked-barreled BB gun. Get over here! Get over here! Come on over. Come off the midway. Come over to the main attraction tent. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. We have morans in abundance. We have, in fact, 87,000 morans standing in 90-degree heat on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. on a Saturday for Beckapalooza or White Stock or... whatever you care to call it. What they were was a bunch of beckerheads. And we've got them all for you right here on Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. You can't tell the morans without this program. You will not believe your ears. You will be shocked. You will be stunned. You will be amazed. For no charge at all, you can slip behind the curtain here and see the morans. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Mothers of small children and pregnant women are advised not to come in. It is that shocking. Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Don't you love the new Moran Monday music? I love the new Moran Monday music. Our good buddy Scott in Sweden sent that along. Just to add, so I wouldn't have to improvise anything. I'm so musically benighted. I had no idea that that was March of the Gladiators. But it is. It's March of the Gladiators. I don't know who wrote it. I'm sure Scott will tell me once he hears the podcast. Thank you, Scott, for sending that along. That helps out immensely.
But then again, I didn't know. I just thought that was circus music or carnival music. Whatever it is, I think it was played on a calliope. Thank you, Anderson Cooper. God. But then again, I think we're to be forgiven. Because to the same extent that I, Moran that I am, didn't know that that was the March of the Gladiators, I'm pretty damn sure that the folks attending Beccapalooza, Whitestock, whatever, didn't know that this was by Aaron Copland. Because it was played again and again. Well, it was played with some frequency. Yeah, that. At the beckoning. There can be only one. Listen to that, Marvelline. Glenn Beck's playing that Beef It's What's for Dinner music. That, of course, is Aaron Copland's Rodeo. In particular, I do believe it is Hoedown. Emerson, Lake, and Palmer did a whale of a job on this, too. When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, It's What's for Demagogue. Yeah, no, they didn't know that was Aaron Copland. And to the same extent, when they were introducing their everyday heroes or whatnot, well, they didn't know this was Aaron Copland either, but I sure hope Aaron Copland's lawyers were paying attention. And you know what? Beck is such a miserable cheapskate, he couldn't even hire an orchestra to play this. Are there no right-wing orchestras? No, there aren't. Not unless you want them to all be on banjo and jew's harp. Jug band, washboard. What's the difference between a banjo and an onion? As Lee reminded us one night. Nobody cries when you cut up a banjo. Yeah, a lot of fanfare for the common man there as well. Some things do stick out in my memory from Whitestock this past weekend. One of them being one of the opening prayers. I was just blown away. Not spiritually. I was not spiritually moved at all during any of this. I was the only speaking in tongues I was doing was a sort of Tourette's-like swearing that was punctuated by Agnes's own swearing, because I've found that the only way I can make her rest and continue to recuperate in bed is if I sit there right next to her and it don't get up. And so Saturday morning I made her watch The Beckoning, and she was about to bust into full-on Tourette's. Bob, won't you turn off this black stag and new knot pole frazzleack and black stag rotten bass and dirt boffin? Honey, this is part of my job. I have to watch this. And I did. As sick as it may seem, I wanted to watch it. Because, among other things, I knew that I would not get the full sense of it unless I watched the whole thing. And unless, because I knew that the for-profit media would find some way to turn it into something that it wasn't. And they did. I've got an example later on from the American paper of record, the New York Times. I don't know. I don't know if they put on knee pads when they wrote this article or not. I don't know if their ears are that sore from Glenn Beck tugging on them. But I watched the whole darn thing. And I was absolutely laid low. I was massacred. It was hopeless. I was laughing so hard. There were tears coming from my eyes. And I sort of got into that, that laughter hiccup that kicks in when you're laughing. That one. I had it going full tilt. Because at one point it turned into one moment it was just literally the setup to a bad old vaudeville joke. A rabbi, an Indian, and a Christian walked up to the podium. I mean, that's the setup to a joke. But it was the invocation for Almighty God to bless the event or whatever it was, you know, the one where the rodeo clown promised a miracle at the end. It's a miracle they weren't all carted off to the Ripley's Believe It or Not Auditorium. That's O-D-D-I-T-O-R-I-U-M Auditorium. But, yeah, he brought up a rabbi, an American Indian, and a fundamentalist evangelical for the invocation. And the rabbi and the Indian stood there, and the white Christian guy did all the talking. Gotta wonder how the rabbi felt about standing there and sort of endorsing the Christian as he was praying to Jeebus. It was an amazing thing. And I was tweeting along. By the way, if you're on Twitter and you're not following me, you really ought to. I don't do a whole lot of tweeting, but I try to tweet something interesting when I can. But I sat there watching, trying to discern what the real purpose of this was. I mean, everybody knew, you know, there was this orgy. Godzilla from Wasilla was there. And she came up and said, she babbled something about, I am the mother of a combat veteran. Never bothering to tell the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful that the reason that she's the mother of a combat veteran is that her son got into... a little bit of trouble involving, you know, B&Es and drugs and, you know, the usual run of fun up there in Wasilla. And was given the choice of, son, you can go to the army or you can go to prison. You choose. Hoo-ah, sir! That's right. You're going to Iraq. Good boy. So, in other words... It was demagoguery. It was phony baloney, sort of the Elmer Gantry-esque, the right-wing religious flummery. But through it all, and it was easy to just sit there and make fun of it, and God knows I did with the on the Twitter. It seemed like Glenn Beck read everything that had any sort of hackneyed, trite applicability to the history of the United States that he could put a spin on. At one point in time, I thought he was going to read The Wreck of the Hesperus or something. Maybe The Cremation of Sam McGee. Now, I've read The Cremation of Sam McGee on the air. Will not subject you to that again. The Wreck of the Hesperus is just a terrible, terrible old chestnut by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. He was a poet and he didn't know it. You could tell it by looking at his feet. They were Longfellows. Shame on me. But really, when he got around to reading the Gettysburg Address, it takes some hubris. It takes a full-on multimillionaire, former drug addict, hubris to stand in front of the Lincoln Memorial and read the Gettysburg Address. Understanding, and that's the thing, early in the proceedings I tweeted, Jesus, just to correct the historical inaccuracies in this thing, it'll take me 6 hours to cover the first 5 minutes. It was that thick. But this would have fit in perfectly. It was the schooner Hesperus that sailed the wintry sea. No, wait a minute, wait. I'm actually reading this like I know how to read poetry. You gotta read it like an idiot demagogue like Glenn Beck. It was the schooner Hesperus that sailed the wintry sea, and the skipper had taken his little daughter to bear him company.
Blue were her eyes as the fairy flax, her cheeks like the dawn of day, and her bosom as white as the hawthorn buds that open the month of May. The skipper, he stood beside the helm, his pipe was in his mouth, and he watched how the veering flaw did blow the smoke now west, now south. Then up and spake an old sailor, he had sailed the Spanish main, I pray thee put into yonder port, for I fear a hurricane. Last night the moon had a golden ring, and tonight no moon we see. The skipper he blew whiff from his pipe, and a scornful laugh left he.
You know the Wreck of the Hesperus, right? It had 19th century people weeping for 100 years. And frankly, I'm surprised that Glenn Beck didn't just put it right out there for the Beckerheads. But he didn't. Michael chiming in something just to add to the delicious irony of it all. Michael in Sebastopol, California. Who refers to himself, I love this, as the abominable Sonoma man. And I said that without stumbling. Ooh, it's going to be a good week. Aaron Copeland, Michael says, was a homo and commie simp, bless him. Damn Beck and these freaks. But that's okay. They didn't even, the name Aaron Copeland had no meaning for the 87,000 Beckerheads. Because, like I said, all they knew that was beef music. Marveline, all of a sudden, I'm kind of hungry. See if one of them hippies down there has got anything besides falafel for sale. I don't care, even if it is that gyro garbage. I'm wanting some beef. Let's see. Hey, Bob, I'll give you one guess as to the writer of the Gladiators March. I'll give you a hint written in 1886 by an American composer who thereafter was known as the March King. That's Sousa? Because Sousa was the March King, right? John Philip Sousa? But I kept... granted, the silliness was enough to keep one busy. And you had to sort of catch the thing in its entirety to really get the gist of what I think actually happened on Saturday. And I'm either dead wrong and miles away from where this really was, or what the intent really was, or I'm kind of pretty damn sharp. Because, see, he did, Glenn Beck, did do, and shame on me, I'm standing here, sitting here, I'm waiting, you know, I'm gonna spend a half an hour talking about him. But he spent 3 hours, appropriating George Washington, appropriating Abraham Lincoln, appropriating Martin Luther King, on and on and on. He appropriated Moses. There was actually even an African-American minister who came to the podium and called Beck, I'm not kidding, the Son of God. I've looked all over the interweb tubes today, and I apparently I'm the only one who was even remotely surprised by that. But I was. I was sitting next to Agnes there, and we were watching it, and Glenn Beck, you are the Son of God. And, what? And Agnes sort of, huh? Because, you know, there's a lot of pain medication coursing through Agnes's system, so she's pretty tranquil right now. And when I yelled, what, she kind of jumped. But no, I heard it. It really happened. I haven't seen that many token African Americans on stage since the Road Company of Roots went through Birmingham. But I sat there. And, yeah, there was, like I said, there was the whole business about SOW, Special Operations Warrior Fund. You know, we talked about that. It turned out it turned out that, you know, all those donations went to Special Operations Warrior Fund, and they had a mother of a slain Special Operations Warrior, and somebody else who was the president of the organization's getting up and doing hosannas to Glenn Beck. But they didn't tell the crowd. Oh, no, they didn't tell the crowd that Beck would be skimming every dime that came in until the complete costs of the event were paid for. And that only after the event was paid for would the Special Operations Warrior Fund get any money. As it turns out, the thing cost, the way it shook out, I think the Special Operations Warrior Fund got about $1 million out of the approximately four that were raised. But don't tell the mouth breathers and the knuckle walkers they think Glenn Beck's a patriot. Never mind that Glenn Beck had enough money from his own salary to have paid the thing out of his own pocket. No, no, no. You don't do that. Never touch the principal. Don't spend your money when you can spend somebody else's. That's what morons are for. God put sheep on the earth to be fleeced. Really? So there was this the Special Operations Warrior Fund stuff, and there was a lot of praying, and Beck, you know, the rabbi, the Indian, and the evangelical, and that was funny. And there was the African American minister who called him the son of God, Beck. About which the for-profit media is writing exactly nothing, unless you've got a link that I haven't seen. I looked yesterday, I looked today. But then again, I don't expect other folks to come up with this, because they don't have the ear. You know, it says in the book, for those who have ears, let them hear. For those who have eyes, let them see. And the for-profit media in this country are largely a group of blind and deaf people. Because they were not raised in the evangelical fundamentalist tradition, as I was, and therefore they do not speak the language. Oh, but sugar, I speak the language. And, you know, this isn't any of that egomaniacal with, you know, half my talent on loan from God or half my brain tied behind my back or any of that BS. It's just a fact. I see and hear things and pick up things that others don't. Because I pay attention in a different way. And I listen for the symbology. And I listen for the code. And it was there if you cared to listen for it. Like I said, he co-opted George Washington. He co-opted Abraham Lincoln. He co-opted Martin Luther King. And yeah, he went and he co-opted Moses. Now, granted, when he started mentioning Moses, I had Yul Brynner's voice in my head. Moses, Moses, Moses. I am thinking this Moses shall have been a fool. Who is this Moses? But even through all of that, I was still listening, and I was still paying attention. And I doped it out. I figured it out. And then it was sort of confirmed for me yesterday. Not that, you know, I'm looking for secret messages in my Cheerios or words to be spelled out in my cereal bowl by the alphabets just sort of randomly floating together. But it's unavoidable. If you know the code, if you speak the language, if you know how to appeal to the existentially bereft mass of Americans who are looking for some sort of an answer and getting none. If you know, if you understand that the right wing will never, ever appeal to anyone's reason or appeal to anyone's intellect, that the heart and soul of right-wing demagoguery is an appeal to emotions, just like inside a Pentecostal church. You don't go to Pentecostal church for scriptural criticism and a close inspection of the text. You go to see the hopping and hear the hooting and the hollering and watch the rolling on the floor and the spit flying and the tongue speaking and the prophesying. That's what you go. And that is what a great deal of America wants. Because a great deal of America has been desensitized to logic or reason. A great deal of America has been desensitized to any notion of being cognizant of the need to attend to their own well-being in order to provide for the common good. There were a lot of dog whistles being blown on Saturday that I would say 99% of liberals in America couldn't hear. But I heard it. And I saw it. And just about toward the end of the thing, I looked over at Agnes and I said, I'll be damned. Now I know what this is all about. What that thing was a normalization of the Mormon religion. There stood Beck in either a bulletproof vest under his blue button-down shirt, with quite possibly his magic underwear on as well. But yeah, he was wearing a bulletproof vest, and there were snipers on the roof of the Lincoln Memorial. Honest to God, what a conceit. What a conceit to think that anybody would want to shoot Glenn Beck. What a waste of lead. But there he was, and you could see it, and you could make it out. And he was, listen. If it was just a sort of meaningless pseudo patriotic flim flam the pageant, then it's utterly meaningless and devoid. It was just sound and fury signifying nothing. But if you consider, for instance, that Glenn Beck's religion only condescended to declare that brown-skinned people of African descent were actually human beings in the mid-1970s. And if you understand that there is a great deal of mistrust of Mormonism in the United States today, and if you understand Glenn Beck's history and you know that he only took off like a bottle rocket after he'd done a little handshake deal with some Mormon uppity mucky mucks, then you're able to see this thing for what it was. It was a normalization of Mormon religion, or an attempt thereof, And while it was said to have been apolitical, you know, there was plenty of politics in that crowd of Beckerheads. Wasn't it interesting that Sarah Palin was invited to speak, but Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman wasn't? In all of that the militaristic, jingoistic right-wing fervor, wouldn't Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman's U-2 boat speech have just gone over like gangbusters? Sure it would have. But Michelle Bachman did not fit within the scheme of things. Because we make a mistake when we think that all evangelicals, all fundamentalists are the same. They're not. For instance, there's the brand of evangelical fundamentalist that Sarah Palin is that goes in for exorcisms and being blessed by the witch outcasters from Africa. And then there's the Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman brand of evangelical fundamentalist that is of a different stripe altogether and still wholly mistrusts Mormonism. I guess I shouldn't say Mormonism, I should refer to it by its proper name, the LSD Church. But that's what this was. It was a normalization with lots and lots of Jesus and never a mention of him walking among the Indians who were actually the offspring of the lost tribes of Israel, you know, Jews in America before Columbus. There's no mention of that. There was no mention of Planet Kolob. There was no mention of the fact that in the Mormon pantheon, Jesus and Satan are brothers, twin brothers, I believe, but brothers nonetheless. There was no mention of any of that. It was all Moses and Jebus and God and George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and on and on and on and on. And Native Americans and rabbis. You know, it was interesting that for all the religious talk out there, the world's second largest religion was not mentioned at all. You think, maybe you think I'm crazy. Listen to this quote. Now, this is just the words. This is not the audio or anything, but this comes from, Becca Palooza, White Stock, Saturday. America today begins to turn back to God. For too long, this country has wandered in darkness. Look forward. Look west. Look to the heavens. Look to God and make your choice. Really? Look west? Now, if you were to look to the, if you were looking for the Holy See, the Mother Church, you'd have to look east, not west. If you were looking to a new dawn, you would look east to the rising sun, not west. If you were looking toward the home of the single largest Protestant religion on earth, you would look south to Nashville, Tennessee, and the home of the Southern Baptist Convention. There's only one reason for looking west, and that is the temple at Salt Lake City, Utah. To the best of my knowledge, I am the only one who has actually noted this. Can't, you know, you can't look east because, yeah, that's Rome and that's Romish and that's papacy, but it's also sort of, you know, generally toward Mecca. And I mean, there was not a word about Islam. Like Not a word.
You know, it is funny that, Michelle Bachmann would, you know, her U-2 boat story, like I said, would have gone quite well. And she was there. She was there holding her own little rally out in the grass somewhere. But that's what it was. It was a great big pageant normalizing Mormonism for Americans who don't trust them because they shouldn't be trusted. Of course, I feel the same way about any religion that wants to run a government. And he got a bunch of people who weren't even Mormons to pay him to do it. Man, that is a beautiful dodge. He put Field's Three Commandments to work and made them go like clockwork. One, you can't cheat an honest man. There was not an honest man in all those 87,000 people. Because they had, by God, been told that there was going to be a miracle. Well, the only miracle was that they got out of that place with their shirts still on. You can't cheat an honest man. Right? Right. Two, never give a sucker an even break. It was there in the twisting of George Washington, in the manipulation of poor slain Abraham Lincoln, in the co-opting of murdered Martin Luther King. Oh, the suckers never got an even break. And without ever having said the word Mormon, he attempted to make Mormon more normal for the rubes and the hoi polloi, thereby establishing Commandment 3, don't smarten up a chump. And then, lo and behold, on Sunday, yesterday, I just happened to be scanning channels. And I ran across the McLaughlin Group. And what did I see? But the first question out of John McLaughlin's mouth was, of all the Republican contenders and potential contenders for the 2012 presidential nomination, who was the greatest beneficiary of Beccapalooza? White stock. And McLaughlin immediately answered his own question by saying Mitt Romney. Willard Romney! So I guess I can say that there was one guy who sort of got it. But on our side, I haven't seen anybody note that it was a great big commercial for the Mormon religion. Email rolling in. Maura says, when I saw Beck remove his tie, I was sure that he was going to put on a Roman collar and continue his full-out Father Coughlin. Oh, he was doing Father Coughlin all right. Jim asking, son of God, are you kidding? The whole thing reminded me of the Nazi Bund meetings in the 30s with Fritz Kuhn and Palin. Where did her son fight? Please answer. He was posted to the somewhere along the way, allegedly posted to the Iraq theater.
I'm sure he never heard a shot fired in anger. But yeah, the preacher really called him, and Glenn Beck is the son of God. He said it, not making it up. With regard to an evangelical code, David in Tennessee noting, Lordy, I do wish Willie Morris was still at the helm of the old gray lady. Wouldn't he be having some big fun commenting on today's state of journalism vis-a-vis the Becks of this world? Oh, damn straight. And I guess, I hope I'm not inflating my own sense of self-worth. I hope that's what makes this worthwhile. Because nobody will have this. And frankly, if you do hear somebody subsequent to the airing of this program mentioning that it was a clearinghouse for Mormon normalization, well, you may just have to wonder if somebody's listening. Because there are thousands of you. Oh, we're not up to that million mark yet, but there are thousands of you. Indeed, indeed. Bob, I didn't hear any mention of the evil Dr. Jakob and the giant flying saucer. Oops, wrong made-up phony baloney religion, Ron and Raleigh. Oh, God. It is Moran Monday on the Horn, and we are open for nominations. I've got a nomination here from Marty. He said, Moran Monday nominations. I have two, both from the baseball St. Louis Cardinals. I wish to nominate first baseman Albert Pujols and manager Tony La Russa, both of whom attended and spoke at the whatever they called that thing at the Lincoln Memorial. Also, for La Russa, he supports Arizona's SB 1070 when Pujols claims to oppose it. Who knows? Also, I think I'd like to nominate the person who sent an e-hate mail to Shannon Moore. Oh, dear God, I saw that thing. I saw that note. Apparently, and I just love Shannon. I got to meet her in Vegas, and she's a great person. And over at her blog, she posted under the title, Best Hate Mail Ever. Dear Michael, I mean Shannon Moore. I think you're an ass, a big fat ass with a big fat mouth. Get a life, get a job. I don't believe you're a woman. I think you're some fat loser sad sack posing as a man on the internet. Your man boobs and beer gut must hang past your knees. And it goes on like this for paragraphs on end. I'm so jealous I could just squeal. But then again, there's a reason I don't put up with wingnuts on this program. They're fun to fight with, and it makes good theater. But it doesn't make for good community, and it doesn't make for a good sense of family. Not in the least. But it's Moran Monday on the Horn, and there are lots of Morans out there. I got one from New Jersey that I just love. I've been hanging on to this one, saving it for today. And I'm sure you will have more of your own. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob.
For the benefit of Mr. Kite, there will be a show tonight on trampoline. The Hendersons will all be there. Later, Pablo Frank is there. What a scene. Over men and horses, hoops and garters, lastly through a hogshead of real fire. In this way, Mr. K will challenge the world. The celebrated Mr. K performs his feat on Saturday at Bishop's Gate. The Hendersons will dance and sing as Mr. Kite flies through the ring. Don't be late. Let us K and H assure the public their production will be second to none. And of course, Henry the Horse dances the waltz. Thank you.
debate in Somerset he'll undertake on solid ground. It means some days in preparation, a splendid time is guaranteed for all. And tonight, Mr. Kite is topping the bill.
Go directly to the phones for further explications, ruminations, explanations, nominations, and recriminations. Let's see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
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 Hello? Is this Bob?
It certainly is.
Hi, my name is Megan. I'm calling from Delaware.
Well, hi, Megan. How are you? You're on the air. Well, you'll have that sometimes, I suppose. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, Susan, what's up?
Well, did you catch the bit from the Bickerhead where he plagiarized Obama?
Oh, you mean where he ripped off the speech?
Yeah.
What do you want? We're talking about Atne Ute Aitbre, if you one what I me.
I mean,
I have to talk in pig Latin sometimes just to keep the little wing nuts in the corners on their toes.
You know, it's just the only thing I can, okay, that and, you know, the bit with him showing up in a bulletproof vest, I have one comment.
Susan, I don't think he would have appeared more conceited if he'd shown up in a Bob Mackey gown.
Yeah, because let's face it, he's not worth the gunpowder, worth blowing to hell.
Or 2 feet across the stage.
No liberal would even bother to blow him up. He's not worth it.
And beyond that, we don't do that kind of thing. That's their side.
The only thing that's liable to knock him over on that stage was the gales of laughter.
Well, indeed.
And I don't think that's illegal just yet. I mean, I know they're working on it, but yeah. As yet, I understand that's still legal. I mean, God, the man is so unbelievably good. Oh, God. I fully expected him to spread his legs, produce his very own son, and name it Jeebus.
Well, why? He was named Jeebus as it stood.
No, as far as he's concerned, he's God. Haven't you figured that out yet? You know what makes this really funny? You know, and I agree with your hypothesis about getting the Mormon religion more or less mainstream. But what's really funny, and a lot of callers to Stephanie Miller's show who are devout Mormons and who know quite a bit about the Mormon religion, including me, this man knows absolutely nothing about the Mormon religion. You don't know shit.
Probably not. But you know what? That's the way most religions like their adherents. You know, there was a reason in the first millennium and a half of the Roman Catholic Church
that they did everything in their power to keep their parishioners from actually reading the Bible. That was for the priests to do. You can't have people getting all studious with their holy book, because the next thing you know, they'll actually be asking questions. I mean, really, I mean, come on, just for a minute here, Susan. Really, a guy in upstate New York used a couple of rocks and looked into his hat and got a religion from it?
That's no sillier than the one anybody else has come up with.
Yeah, but the thing is, that happened in the 19th century, not the first century B.C.
They're all for roots. Hey, a con is a con is a con. Whether it started in 1 B.C. or the 19th century, it's still a con. And I'm sorry for people who believe are devout followers. I am a devout follower of my religion, but it's still a con, and I know it.
Well, it was George Carlin who said it best, I think. He said, you know, religion is like a lift in your shoes. If it makes you walk a little taller, walk a little more comfortably, that's
whatever,
fine for you.
Whatever works.
Yeah, but don't go nailing lifts onto the feet of the natives.
Exactly. And whatever gets you through the night.
Yeah, that's John Lennon, of course.
Just don't go making it into law. And these guys are trying to make this place into a theocracy, and that's what I object to vehemently. It's plastered across everything they say. They want a theocracy. And the first thing that they need in a theocracy is an ignorant politician, which is why they want to get rid of the Department of Education. They want people, their ideal is people who cannot read. If you cannot read, you cannot challenge their pronunciations that this is from God. God told you to believe this way.
And if you're, stupid, who are you to challenge that? But, the one thing that really blew me away, because the preacher had to expand, after he called Beck the son of God, he had to say, and you're all sons of God. At which point I realized that very subtly, and I'll mention this to you, Susan, because I know you'll get it, there was one more guy being ripped off at Beckapalooza.
Yeah, Robert Heinlein.
Yeah, and I think I tweeted, if the guy says grok, I'm going to put the straw in the tequila bottle. There's only so much my sobriety can take.
Yeah, there's only so much
I mean, we got... Jesus, you know what? The next thing I'm looking for is for these people to hook up with the Dianetics crowd. You know, the Scientologists.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, my word. Can you just imagine?
The thing is, the Dianetics crowd are...
Thou art God, and thy thetans are out of whack.
Yeah, the problem is, and I admittedly know very little about Dianetics, but from what little I do know, it's very complex.
It's complex like a Rube Goldberg device is complex, Susan.
That's not something you want the peasants trying to learn. They're not them.
No, and again, you know, the Scientology is set up in such a way that you've got to pay a lot of money. Scientology is religion married to Amway. and you've got to pay a lot of money in before they get you all the way to the top, before you start approaching the upper echelons, and they let you in and go, shh. Don't tell the rubes.
Here's the secret.
It's all a fraud. You know, it was no good. It was no good for me that early in the years of my developing brain that I got hold of Tom Robbins's Another Roadside Attraction. If you've never read it, you should. I think it was the second book he wrote after Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, or maybe before Even Cowgirls Get the Blues. But it has to do with the sudden and entirely unwanted rediscovery of the body of Jesus, who, as I think Tom Robbins said, was looking no better than he did the day they took him down off the cross. And that's the thing. Look, you know, come on. Does anybody actually believe that Pope Benedict believes the hokum that he hustles? Come on, please. You know, does anybody believe that a Roman Catholic priest with his penis in the mouth of a 10-year-old believes the miracle of the Mass? Please. Does anybody believe that the elders of the Mormon Church out in Salt Lake City actually believe that Joseph Smith dug up some magic golden tablets and read them by looking through his hat with a pair of rocks? Honest to God. And frankly, we can add into the list. Does anybody actually believe that an invisible sky god came down and raped a 14-year-old virgin and created his son and then killed him off to prove he loved the world?
Yeah. Or an angel Moroni came down and pointed the way to...
Right. See, I think Joseph Smith was having a laugh on his followers by naming his angel.
Either that or he was tired in a kite.
No, he was having a laugh because he named the angel Moron. Moroni.
That's entirely possible.
That ain't Moroni. That's Moroni. And at its core, every religion is having a bit of sport on its adherents. You know, the Exodus, you would think that if that many people went through the desert over 40 freaking years, somebody would have lost a sandal.
Mm-hmm.
There is not one shred of archaeological data to support the existence of the Exodus. Not one. Ask Eugene Finnerman. He knows.
Well, I'm an archaeology buff, and despite the incredible records that the Jews kept during that time, and despite the incredible records that the Romans kept during that time, you can go through every one of those records of both peoples, and there is no record of a carpenter of Nazareth who was crucified.
No, there are indirect references. I forget which Roman historian it is that says that the fire of Rome that Nero was alleged to have set was blamed upon the followers of Crestus, Chrestus, which would be a Latinization, of Christos.
That's long after the so-called crucifixion.
Oh, right, the fundamentalist, the phony baloney evangelicals like to point to the writings of Josephus, but even the writings of that paragraph in Josephus, any textual critic will tell you that is an addition to the book.
Yeah, and it's long after the fact. So there is no
contemporary, right,
primary reference, even though they counted people up one side, down the other. The Romans counted people up one side, down the other. There is no reference. It's like, you know, he was the man that didn't exist, as far as those records were concerned. Now, that can be one of several different causes. A, he did never existed. B, somebody went in and erased him. C, divine intervention.
Well, and
there's also
even the books that the Christians hold out, the Book of Mark. Everybody who knows anything about text knows that Mark ends at Mark chapter 16 verse 8, and it ends. Or maybe it's not verse 8. No. It ends at verse 5. And entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. And that's it. That's where it ends. Everything else is made up, added a couple or 300 years later. All the business about Jesus wandering around and going to have tea with Mary Magdalene and all that. It's not there. And by the same by extension of the same idea, Susan, the same thing obtains with all the phony baloney history. Glenn Beck having a fit about a star on the Washington Monument and just making stuff up. But again, for those of us who are interested in finding out how they are doing their evil work, it is absolutely imperative that we understand and we comprehend that we and this sort of ties into what David from Maine has been saying of late, and that is that, you know, we're going to snicker about them and we're going to talk, oh, look at the idiots, but we fail ourselves and we fail the people that we care about when we don't look to understand that when we oppose their irrationality with rationality, that when we oppose their emotionalism with our reason, we lose. We lose. We have to come up with our own emotional appeals to people, because appealing to their intellect ain't never gonna get it. You know, and you know what? I mean, there's a million ways to explain that. I know intellectually. There is no doubt in my mind intellectually that I need to quit smoking. I must quit smoking. It will eventually kill my ass.
Yes, it will.
But you know what? That intellectual knowledge ain't worth jack up against my addiction.
Maybe I ought to send you a tape of Donald breathing.
No, again, that is, you're proving my point, Susan. That is an intellectual appeal to something that exists on a purely irrational level.
Actually, I know exactly how you're feeling, because for years people told me you need to quit. And for years I did not listen to them until one day I said, I've had enough of this. It's time to quit. And then I was ready, and then I quit. All on my own.
And some can do that, and some cannot.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand very well that the only way I'm going to ever quit smoking is if they build me a Betty Ford clinic and I get to check in for 6 days and go pet the ponies like Rush did when he was supposedly getting off the junk. Because that's what it is. It's junk. It's an addiction that's not even any damn fun. Granted, I love the first one with a cup of decaf in the morning and one after a good meal or a night, you know, that's great. Everything else is just window dressing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what I mean. Susan, thank you. Thank you for adding to the discussion this evening. And yeah, you know what? You do know the history of Mormonism.
Yeah. And there is a way to counter.
Is it intellectual?
No. It's your passion. You keep your goddamn hand off my constitution, or I am going to, by God, punch you right in the face, you stupid son of a bitch.
You know what? Yes, that works with them. They understand direct threats to, they understand that.
That my constitution.
And you leave it alone.
You keep your rotten hands off it.
Bingo.
You want to change it? There's a process. You follow that process. In the meantime, I don't.
Exactly. Susan, have a great night.
You too, and get my love to Agnes.
I sure will. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon and rolling right along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Did you get my email?
I did.
What did you think? About what I said.
Well, about it being diabolically clever?
Yeah, and...
Yeah, well, just so everybody else can be in on this, too. Juanita said, it was to me like a revival meeting provoking tithing, proselytizing, getting down on your knees in prayer, and taking up an offering.
Yes, early in the production, he asked with all with cell phones to call in a donation for the Children of Veterans. That was the Special Warriors Operation Fund.
Yeah, I couldn't think of the name of it.
And but see, Juanita, this goes to prove my point. You speak the code too. And you said it was like many church services, lasted 3.5 hours. I recall being in church till 2 or 3 p.m. and not leaving because of guilt feelings, and most of these people seem to be standing, Lordy, Lordy, Lordy. And there you go.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Something is really going on. I mean, that it was slick, too.
Sure. Well, oh, yeah. There's no doubt it was slick.
Yeah, it was slick. And by the way, Bob, you're wrong about the amount of people there because Bachman wouldn't lie. She said there were 1 million people.
Well, there goes that miracle math made easy.
Right. That woman would never tell a story, would she?
Oh, golly, no.
Oh, me. But they're all a bunch of crooks and liars. And I said, boy, that guy is some piece of work.
Well, you know, there's one other thing that was at work here, too. If you listened very carefully in the still small moments in between the ranting and raving at this thing, you could hear in the distance Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage screaming.
Screaming?
Yes. Because they were, oh, my God, this has to be. They spent all day Saturday, those three, eating their own livers. Oh, the jealousy.
I didn't hear them. Yeah, I was thinking about that jealousy deal. I thought about that. I was thinking about Rush, you know.
Because it's like David from Maine mentioned. You know, they tried it with Rush to get him on TV. They tried to get Savage on TV. And only with Hannity and only with Beck. And now Beck has surpassed Hannity. That's what this has done. In addition to being a great big so-called normalizing of Mormonism, this was Beck telling Hannity and Limbaugh to move over, that there's a new right-wing sheriff in town.
Yeah. Somebody I heard on one of the news programs said it sounded like he was running for the office of God.
But the thing is, The so-called mainstreamers have no conceptualization of what it's like to be at a tent meeting or a camp meeting or a dinner on the ground.
Yeah.
You recognized it right away. I did, too.
That's exactly what I thought when I was sitting there, because he's talking about getting down on your knees and he's talking about tithing and he took on an offering right away.
Right. He was speaking the evangelical language, Juanita, and doing so as a so-called practicing Mormon. He was trying to seamlessly connect the two, and the one person who benefits from that, and the only person who benefits from that, is Willard Romney.
Oh, that was a good analogy, yeah.
And you see, Beck made a deal. And, I mean, this isn't speculation. I mean, Beck made a deal and has talked about it. It was the Mormon superstructure that catapulted him into his position. And so he's paying back to do.
I've wondered about that. I wonder what they... Doesn't look too good for them, does it? Doesn't reflect well on them. The leaders, whatever.
Yeah.
But he said one thing that I noticed. I don't know if you said it or not. It's hard to hear over the over the phone. But when you're waiting.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he said something about about Jesus being over in the Middle East, and said, and also over here, and said that's one of their teachings. That he also appeared over here.
Did he say that? I missed that.
Well, he had a little bit of subtle. How do you say it?
Subtlety?
Subtlety, yeah. I just noticed it because I'm aware, of that. But that was, he just mentioned it one time and said, and over here too. And I thought, whoa. But I'm going to tell you, there's something really strange. I mean, you want to talk about the Bible, but remember the Antichrist, a bunch of them. This guy, because he's going to deceive. I know he's going to deceive a lot of these church people. And another thing is, like, years ago, Pat Robertson, he had somebody on there telling on his, when he had the broadcasting system, was talking about the Mormons, and they refused, they didn't want to run it. And, Pat Robertson and them didn't. And, you know, it was also the same way about, Reverend Moon.
You know what's fascinating, Juanita, is that I said that no one had noticed what Beck was doing, but that's not entirely true, because the right wing, an element of the right wing, understood what he was getting at. It's fascinating that a so-called conservative writer and founder of a thing called Worldview Weekend, a guy named Brannon House, wrote the following about Glenn Beck. He said, "While I applaud and agree with many of Glenn Beck's conservative and constitutional views, that does not give me or any other Bible-believing Christian justification to compromise biblical truth by spiritually joining Beck." And then David Shedlock, also an evangelical blogger, said, "Jesus Christ's church has universally rejected Mormonism's anti-Trinitarian theology and its claim that mortals may become God."
Yeah, they don't believe in a lot of things that the... Well, I hate to say this, but about the Christians, regular Christians, too, you know. They've got their own theory about the
Oh, yeah, no, they're nuts, too. This is all taste straight versus less filling,
you know,
one.
The devil is Jesus' brother.
Yeah, the Mormons believe that, yes.
Yeah.
You might find this interesting. During Beckerstock, on Saturday, during the rally, a group issued a press release via something called Christian Newswire, okay? And on the Christian Newswire, this outfit, Christian Investigator, said, you're going to love this. "Glenn Beck promotes a false gospel. However, many of his political ideas can help America. Our country was founded on Judeo-Christian values." Of course, we know that's a lie. "Mormonism is not a Christian denomination, but a cult of Christianity." Well, they're all cults, frankly. You want a cult? Let's try the Southern Baptist Church on for size. "The country needs to get back to the simplicity of the Bible. The reason our country is in bad shape is that ministers, for the most part, do not share the truth." There's that word. You know, you'll notice they say that they don't share the facts. "Many endorse false gospels, including Mormonism. Christians need to preach the truth in Christ's love. Sometimes the Lord's way is not the most popular way." Oddly enough, I don't know how they can write that, considering that 80% of America consider themselves as believing in some sort of God. "True Christianity can appear to be intolerant. However, the Bible is always right on major moral issues. In the United States, we need a spiritual revival based on the truth of the Bible. Our country is in a balance. Without a true revival, we are doomed. It is good for people to get together to stand up for our country. However, if we are to have a true revival, we need to preach the true gospel, rain or shine." And this is some Mormon beliefs. 1, God has a physical body and so does his wife.
Yeah.
2.
Yeah. And she's eternally pregnant.
You know, it sucks to be her, I'll bet. And then 2, no Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost are 3 separate gods. People can become gods. 3, Jesus was created by sexual union between God and Mary. 4, Jesus was married. 5, Jesus' death does not atone for all sin. 6, baptism for the dead. 7, African descendants were not granted Mormon privileges until 1978.
Yeah.
8, Jesus and Satan were spirit brothers.
You heard about them in the highest heaven, right?
Oh, yeah.
The way the original teaching was?
Yeah.
The only way they could get to the highest heaven, the black people, was to be the servants. They couldn't have their own planet with their own eternal pregnant bride. They could be there to serve, and that was it.
Nice.
I tell you, I've studied a lot of different ones, and of all the ones, I think these people, these are the, is the Looney Tuniest, one of the Looney Tuniest, I know. But, you know, they seem to be good people, but, and you know, they believe that, the only way to pay for murder is to be executed, because that's the only way they'll be forgiven. If they murder, you remember Gilmore that wanted to be shot?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But they'll have, if they're a really good, I don't know what's going to happen to poor Marie Osmond, you know. I think something must have happened there, because she moved to Hollywood, and she said she'd never go back to Salt Lake City. You know, she got divorced again, and then she had, one of her daughters came out as gay, and then she had another son, she had a son that recently committed suicide. So who knows what kind of problems they had. You know what I'm saying? The thing is, and it's not just Mormons, it's like you said, if you listen, what I was talking about one night was that about traditional kill you. And I'm talking about the things that we believe, that we've heard since we were children, and we think they're the truth, and they are not necessarily true. Now, I was always like, when I was growing up, the thing about, of course, when I was little, my parents weren't in the church, you know. My mother had never been. But anyway, I always heard that, wait a minute, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, about what you could do on Sunday and what you couldn't do. And it was like, oh, you never wash clothes on a Sunday. You never do this, you never do that. But you can cook, and you can now, you know, go to a restaurant. But a lot of people, they still think that if you mop or if you wash clothes on a Sunday, you're sinning. And I said, if you look up, it says you don't even cook on that day, on the Sabbath, in the Bible. You don't even cook. You cook it before, I guess, the day before, and you have it to eat. And you don't go but so many steps from where you live, if you unless you're going to a house of worship. You don't do any traveling. But, you know, that's just a simple thing. But it causes, some of these things cause so much turmoil and so much problem until a lot of people, you know, just don't want anything to do with it. And I can't blame them. I always said, I used to say I'd like to start my own church and call Just As I Amers. And I would want to welcome everybody and, you know, and have service. You know how they'll say, oh, so-and-so, they don't come to church, they send the children. And, oh, that's horrible. And then they can't get up on Sunday morning to come. And the thing is that a lot of people are night people. I'm a night person. And it's hard to do that. Why can't they have church at night or on a different day? Or in the afternoon?
Well, because Juanita, they're authoritarian in nature. The
that's
church,
right,
is, you know, the church does not bend to your will. You bend to the church's.
Yeah.
It's all about submission.
That sort of
works as a commonality throughout the monotheistic religions. You know, it reminds me of I guess it was probably 2003, 2004, 2005, somewhere in there, when I read a story about a child in New Jersey, and she had a gluten allergy.
Uh huh.
And they were Roman Catholic, the family. And they asked the diocese if they could please have, you know, the little magic crackers.
Yeah.
If they could have their daughters made out of rice instead of wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Because it made her violently ill to take the body of Christ as constituted with gluten. And the mother church told them to get stuffed and go away.
if it was good, if it's been good enough for a couple of millennia of good Roman Catholics, it ought to be good enough for their sick little sinner daughter. And they promptly became Episcopals.
Well, you know, at one time there was this church that was arguing about the grape juice and wine for the Lord's Supper. And they couldn't agree on it, so they all decided to use Coca-Cola.
You know, we got we got grape juice in the Baptist church, and that's and of course that's, and you may have heard the same thing. It was explained to us that we use grape juice because drinking is evil. And in the Bible, where it says wine, that's just another word that they used for grape juice.
Oh, and
the wine that they had, they talk about in the New Testament, it ain't, it's just grape juice. It ain't really alcohol wine.
And why did they call Jesus a wine bibber? It will drive you insane.
Well, that's because it is. That's just because it is. But you know what? I'm glad. I actually thought about you, Juanita, when all this stuff was going through my mind, because, and you've proved what I was thinking at the time. I thought, you know, Juanita's going to fit. Yeah, Juanita gets this. Because, you know, you really have to have traversed that lonely road toward realization that you have been had.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know,
and it does not leave you without scars.
Oh, no. Like you said, you're a recovering Southern Baptist, and I'm a recovering something else, because these things that pop up in me, I'll get feeling guilty, you know, about different things. And it, you don't let it go all at once. But, yeah, I'm recovering whatever I came from, you know. But these people that teach you to do certain things or obey certain people, you're going to get in trouble if you've got any problems at all. They will kill you. It either kill you or it'll destroy you. And you're a walking dead.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And, you know, look, if they could get, and see, that's the beauty of having a secular society that is set apart from the hierarchy of the church. Because in former days, you know, you could be exiled. You could be excommunicated from the church. And a person who was a member of the church in good standing was not allowed to so much as give you a crust of bread. You couldn't be buried in sanctified ground. You were doomed on earth. You were shunned.
And
don't think for a minute that they wouldn't do that today, because they do it within their congregations.
And
if you cross them, you're dead to them.
They talk about, what is it, the Sharia law?
Yeah, please.
I guarantee you, whoever gets in control of this country, whichever one of them, if they do, we will have some kind of Sharia law. I'm not saying it right, am I? But
well, no, the Christian Reconstructionists want exactly that. They want to bring back stoning.
Yeah, there you go. And it's, but like you say, it's okay for them, whatever, but nobody else. You got, you know, it's okay for Republicans and Tea Partiers, but not for anybody else.
Right.
Like, I don't know how you put that, but you put it really great. You know, you got the little abbreviation and all.
Yeah.
And it's true. You know, for years I thought, well, why is it okay for them? You know, and then you realize, yeah, that's it. Just like Stephen Baldwin, you know, taking up for Mel Brooks. I mean, not Mel Brooks.
Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. But he didn't take up for Tiger Woods, I bet you. Bet you by golly. And another thing is, did you see the Emmys last night? I watched the Emmys.
No, I didn't.
That guy that's from The Office, from England, he was saying poor Mel Gibson, said he's been through so much. And then he said, but not as bad as the Jews have. That was so good.
Well, Juanita, you have yourself
Thanks
a wonderful
Colin,
evening.
Speak the truth. You too.
All right. We'll talk
you
soon.
Good evening.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. And Juanita bears it out. There are scars that come from having the light turn on for you when you're in the middle of a fundamentalist, or really when the light finally goes on, and you reject the fraud, the frauds and the flimflammery. There's a lot of pain involved, but the knowledge, Mark Twain said something like, "Be good and you'll be lonesome and you'll be free." It's kind of like that. Yeah. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Aloha.
Aloha. What's up, Jim?
Oleonhe. How are you tonight?
I'm pretty good. You?
Well, I've just been listening, and I tried to watch part of that meeting on the mall on Saturday, and I guess what they tried to accomplish was some form of, what is it, Great Awakening?
Yeah, I think that's what he was going for. I mean, if you look at the doggerel that he opened the thing with, it was pretty clear that that's what he was going for. Let's see. I think I've got the quote right here, Jim. Glenn Beck announced at the opening of the rally, "Something that is beyond man is happening. America today begins to turn back to God. For too long, this country has wandered in darkness." Well, Jim, that stuff has been preached at every rally that Jerry Falwell ever attended. Billy Graham made a career out of it. Billy Sunday made it. You know, they've been preaching that America has turned from God for as long as there's been an America.
Well, Bob, I think the years of darkness, really, I think one of the darkest periods in our history have been during the past 8 years, or the past 8 years plus minus two, when George Bush was in office.
Oh, without a doubt.
And this country attempted to do a number of things which they should not have done. And a great deal of great errors have been made, for which we are paying in terms of blood, treasure, our own reputation amongst the nations of the world. And basically, this was done by the followers of some of the people that you saw assembled on the National Mall. I mean, did you look at that crowd up there on the mall?
Yes, I did. Man, was it white.
Well, not only was it white, but, I mean, I could look at the expressions of the people there, and they were just, I don't know, they were almost faceless, expressionless. And I could see no light coming through their eyes. I could see no type of compassion or any type of divination or whatever. And I don't know, what do you think what are the political outcomes of that particular meeting on the mall on Saturday? What do you think they are?
Well, like I said, I think the first beneficiary, the prime beneficiary, is Willard Romney.
Okay.
If he capitalizes on it.
Right.
Because the whole thing was designed to say, hey, look, you know, Beck's a Mormon. And, you know, he scattered, Juanita was right, he scattered some Mormon code through there, but I'm not as good at Mormon code as I am at fundamentalist code. But it was an attempt to draw fundamentalists and evangelicals all together under one big tent and get them to march as a monolith. Now, see, if you're using the code, Jim, you don't have to say things overtly. You don't have to get up and say Obama is a Muslim. You just get up there and talk about turning away from the darkness.
Well, these people are masters of underspeak. and they're masters of subtlety, and they are attempting to appeal to a very ad hominem portion of the human psyche.
They are, as usual, appealing to the basest and most awful segments of human nature, Jim. But, you know, you said that they are masters of underspeak and that they have incredible subtlety. And again, this is just a product of having been brought up in all this stuff. Who does the Bible describe as being that way as well, Jim?
Bob, you're more adept at this sort of thing than I am, because a lot of this type of stuff...
Well, Satan is a master of subtlety.
Well, of course he is. He's definitely. I mean, obviously, he's going to use all types of means. And as Juanita said, there will be many people fooled by these false prophets and people who speak in God's name, but they do so for ulterior motives and the exact reason, and they are the antithesis of any form of devout and true Christianity, in my opinion.
You want to get a sense for who was attending this conclave or this clavern on Saturday, Jim? Listen to this. This is a quote from the New York Times story. Becky Benson, 56, traveled from Orlando, Florida, because, she said, quote, we believe in Jesus Christ, and Jesus, she said, would not have agreed with the economic stimulus package, bank bailouts, and welfare. You cannot sit and expect someone to hand out to you. You don't spend your way out of debt. Good God, where is trickle-down economics in Matthew, Mark, or Luke? Please.
It's not there. Laffer is not there. Supply side was never preached by Christ, Bob. Never. And that's what these people, that's what their fundamental economic belief is. It's supply-side economics that the rich will allow us to devour crumbs that fall from their table.
That, you know, you said that they would have sat and listened to the Sermon on the Mount and never heard a word.
Oh, they'd been found asleep.
They certainly missed that the poor shall inherit the earth part, didn't they?
Yeah, they certainly did. They certainly did. And, you know, these things frighten me because, I mean, I've seen so many historical rallies of this type that had these false multipliers that keep them going.
Absolutely. And the way that they have insinuated these BS talking points into people who have no conceptualization of what they're saying. In the New York Times story, again, Ron Sears, age 65, of Corbin, Kentucky, is quoted, and he says, the federal government is only to offer us protection from our enemies and help us when we need it. What's help us when we need it? Jim, what was he doing there? What does he think that unemployment insurance is? What does he think that the women and infant children funding is? What does he think that... food stamps are. What does he think Social Security SSI is? I'm not talking about the old age, the pension Social Security. It's help when we need it. But the thing is, he deems anybody but himself. And again, this is all code. Help when we need it means help when I need it.
Right. And you know, I don't think there's an ounce of compassion in many of these people. And I know there's no ounce of compassion in people like Beck or Sarah Palin or people like that. I really don't think so. I mean, they are opportunists. They're taking advantage of a situation to advance their own political careers and to establish some type of theocratic hegemony at the expense of other people in direct contravention to the Constitution upon which this country was established.
You're here.
I'll tell you a joke if you want to hear it.
Okay.
And I don't mean to be sacrilegious to anyone. I don't mean any offense to this, but I've heard this joke all my life. But there was a church that had this come as your favorite hymn party. Have you heard this one?
No. but I know your jokes, and I can't wait.
Well, this church had a come as your favorite hymn party, and the pastor or whomever the Lord High Holy God, that particular section of whatever they believed in, his function was to judge the costumes. And at first he came to Sister Olga, who had a string of light bulbs around her waist, and he said, "Sister Olga, how clever. It must be, let the lower lights be burning." And then he went to Brother John, Sister Mary. Well, she came in all together. And he said, "Well, Sister Mary, that's a bit shocking, but could this be just as I am?" And then he went to Brother John, who had this thing of wheat tied around his waist, and he said, "Brother John, how clever. This must be bringing in the sheaves." He said, "Well, I don't know, Parson, but if Sister Mary don't put on her clothes, it's going to be coming through the rye."
Oh.
I should not have told that.
Jim will be here all week. Try the veal. Don't forget to tip your server.
Anyway. But, you know, I just, where have I been? All this sort of thing has just been, you said you've led a sheltered life. I must have led one too. But I haven't. But I've never encountered this type of chicanery.
Well, it's been there. It's been there all along, Jim. But the thing is, what it boils down to is that the stuff that the right wing, these purveyors of these merchants of hate, the thing that they've done is that in former generations, there were things that they could talk about only behind closed doors and only among their own. You know. And then it got to where they could speak about it in their John Birch Society meetings and their Klan rallies.
Right. You know, I've seen this picture from Nazi Germany. They have a picture of Hitler speaking, and beneath that picture was, "In the beginning was the Word." And I guess some of these people are following people like Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin the same way they followed that idiot.
Yeah, and there's an existential inquiry that has to be made as to why. Why are they so willing to follow someone like this? And just as Jesus said, "The poor ye have always with ye."
Exactly.
You know, he didn't say poor how. Now that verse occurs when Judas is saying, "Hey, we could sell these because that's back when that's when he's getting his hair washed with some woman's, or his feet washed with some woman's hair, right?
Right. She had purchased some oil to do it.
And it's ascribed to Judas, although I'm not sure that it really was. But somebody says, you know, "Hey, Rabbi, we could sell this, take the money, and give it to the poor." And Jesus looks up, and Kurt Vonnegut says it's an example of Jesus making a joke. But that's beside the point. Jesus looks up and says, "You know, the poor ye have always with you. I'm not going to always be here." And it's a very human moment. But the thing that I always thought about was, we assume it's the monetarily poor. But that statement, "the poor you have always with you," that's not just a statement on pecuniary poverty.
Oh, no. You're talking about intellectual poverty. You're talking about spiritual poverty. You're talking about a poverty of compassion. A poverty of humanity.
Right, and by way of sort of expanding on your query, we have in this country a vast number of people whose poverty of spirit, whose poverty of compassion, whose poverty of mercy, whose poverty of love.
Precisely.
Is almost incalculable.
Poverty of civility. Poverty.
And those people will flock and gravitate to the likes of a Glenn Beck.
Just a complete poverty of total virtue, period.
A poverty of humanity, Jim.
Exactly. It's exactly what I've said. You know, a poverty of humanity. And lack of, and people who have no compassion, their eyes are dead. Their minds are blocked, and they are simply I really don't know what to describe him as being.
Well, think about Edward Arlington Robinson's poem, Richard Cory.
Oh, yeah.
And it says, and we cursed our bread. But Richard Cory went home one night and put a bullet in his head.
Exactly.
And he was rich beyond measure.
Right.
Well, you know, there's some that Paul McCartney turned it into a magnificent song, called, oddly enough, Richard Cory. But also, we have living examples of it. Let's say for a moment, Jim, that, and I mean no insult by this, that you're Rush Limbaugh. For several years, you have lived in a 26,000-square-foot mansion with nothing but a cat. You're making $40,000 or $40 million, $50 million a year. And the only thing you can think of to do with that money is to take a big enough handful of OxyContin to just make the world go away? God Almighty, with $50 million a year, how could you be bored? But it's because he suffers. It's because he is one of those poor that we have always with us. You know, that verse is not an indictment of people who are pecuniarily poor. It's a victim. It's an indictment of a society that creates people who are morally, ethically, and spiritually bankrupt. And there sits, and if he wasn't such a hate-filled, miserable bastard, I could feel some sympathy for him. But he is, and I don't. And so he's, but you know, you can extend it across line after line after line. You know, people want to give Tiger Woods hell for all of his sexual flings. Well, you know what? What's left when you've got that much money? What's left to make your adrenaline gland do what adrenal glands are supposed to do and create a little excitement, except maybe sexual conquest? For others, it was said that Michael Jordan would go on gambling sprees and lose, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on a single roll of the dice or a single turn of the card. Because when you have nothing underneath you to sort of bear up existentially, there's that word again,
mm-hmm.
All the money in the world isn't going to make you any better.
No, it's not.
You know, it was said that when Alexander had to turn back, he wept, for there were no more worlds to conquer.
Yeah, he had lost his reasons for being, his raison d'etre.
Yeah.
The only thing I can say about what I heard there on the TV on Saturday is tinkling brasses and sounding cymbals.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, Sarah Palin, how much do they pay that woman? I think I don't think
she paints her nails for less than $100,000.
Well, I heard today that basically the minimum is $75,000 for her to even, you know, come near where you are. And then she's got this huge contract in which she cannot have any straws that don't have a bend in them and things of that nature. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yep, take out all the brown M&Ms.
Exactly, and, you know, wardrobe fees, stuff like that. I mean, these people have a hustle going, the likes of which, the only thing I can say to end this conversation is, what they lacked up there on the mall was a huge sign that says, see the egress.
This way.
Good night, sir.
Jim, you take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. This way to the egress. P.T. Barnum would have been damn proud. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Listen, I'm so glad you watched it because I couldn't really bear it. You know what I mean?
Well, every now and then I try to go out and take one for the team.
Yeah, no, I figured as much. But, you know, I did sort of read various things, but I think that your observation is pretty on with the Mormon business, especially the connection to Romney. That asset stripper comes out real well if your analysis is right, and that's frightening because he, you know?
Yeah, you broke up a little bit, but I get your meaning.
He's coherent, unlike Beck.
Exactly.
But I saw some pictures and more darkies on stage than in the crowds, huh?
Oh, yeah, like I said, since the road company or routes went through Birmingham.
Or President Bush's 2004...
That was the other thing. When I started seeing that parade of black folk on the stage, I thought, Jesus Christ, I bet this is the same gang they had for 2004 in Bush.
Exactly. I mean, that was like the go-to event for that little phenomena. I'd never get over that.
Sandra, I don't have the cultural background or the stripes or whatever to say it, but is Alveda King simply sickening?
No. It's mind-numbing, you know.
And that I forget who it was that criticized her. Somebody criticized her because, you know, she's out there talking about one man, one woman, you know, sanctity of marriage, yada, 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 bullshit, bullshit, bullshit.
Yeah.
And somebody said, you know, Coretta Scott King said that Dr. King would have endorsed marriage equality. You know what her answer was?
Yeah, she said she's the one with the DNA.
Well,
yeah,
I have his DNA, and she didn't.
Yeah, no. She's a piece of work, that one. And she's getting a lot of heat. That's why she's freaking out. A lot of people are coming down on her. It's like, you know, dude, what the hell? You know what I mean?
But you know what? She's got a great hustle, and I have a feeling it pays nicely.
I'm sure it does, especially when she can step up for all the horrible monsters that are behind her. You know what I mean? They don't want to show their face, you know? They just have put her out there. I mean, it's just tried and true throughout history. But, you know, the whole thing about what Jim was talking about, like a sort of dead lifelessness of the people who follow this crap, I just tie it to what Christopher, what is his name?
Hitchens?
No, not Hitchens. The guy who, Hedges.
Hedges, yeah.
What he always talks about with the white religious right is that they can't figure out what's happening to them, you know, by the powers that be. So, you know, they turn to this sort of fundamentalism, be it Beck or whoever. I mean, the scary thing about him is how, what a huge stage he has, you know?
Oh,
that's the thing that's different from the usual run-of-the-mill right, even more so than Farwell or these other freaks. This Beck person is that's off the charts for the backing and the platform. That's what bugs me the most about him.
Well, and in a way, he's the perfect storm because, you know, after years of listening to Limbaugh, Limbaugh won't go out there and get religious very often.
And he won't
get explicitly religious about anything as to what his faith is or isn't, because at the end of the day, his faith is in the bottom line of his bank account.
Right. I mean, it's all about his faith is just greed. That's literally.
And
that's,
you know, I remember all those years that he used to just mercilessly ride the American Civil Liberties Union. And then, of course, the ACLU saved his ass from prison. And now he doesn't say anything good about him. He just doesn't say anything about them.
Yeah, no. You know, I mean, his stick is well old and tried, and anybody with any sense is aware of it. But this character here, this Beck, is, you know, it's a whole different thing going on. But you know, I do think that it is a perfect storm in the sense of this more than usual economic insecurity and that whites are now feeling it pretty pronounced has to factor in, because this insecurity has always been around for a lot of us, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
So for it's just sort of, you have a huge chunk of this country that has been decoupled, and ain't nobody reaching out to ever bring them back.